Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! February edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Did you know that? It's still snowing here. But that's okay. Because I understand that, well, snowfall doesn't mean that the climate isn't changing and that overall global temperatures aren't getting warmer, because I have a brain. Now, while the right-wingers over there continue to sing their I could do some real big thinking, I could be another Lincoln if I only had a brain refrain, you and I know that this is not idly passed by. Winters will get snowier. Summers will get hotter. Springs will get rainier. That is the world that the coal barons and their ilk and the hydrocarbon junkies in general have made for us. Right? Yeah. So if you were watching either my Facebook or my Twitter feed, and if you're not following my Twitter feed, why aren't you? God, that sounds egomaniacal, doesn't it? With talent on loan from God. Yeah, I just feel nasty talking like that. But seriously, if you were following my Twitter feed or my Facebook feed, and now my Buzz feed at Gmail, this stuff is proliferating. It's huh. It's all over the place. I can't keep up with it. But if you want to, feel free to follow me on Gmail Buzz, too, just by following BobKincaid at gmail.com. We can make all of this work out. But if you were following my feed earlier this evening, you would have noted that beyond the usual wingnuttery of, look at all this here snow. I guess that means there ain't no global warming. Wait a minute, I can't laugh and breathe through my mouth at the same time. Dang, just scuffed my knuckles again. Well, you would know that, it's just Repiglicans behaving like Repiglicans, isn't it? I was going to try something trenchant and erudite, but, you know, trying to say something trenchant and erudite about wing nuts, birthers, baggers, tenthers, deathers, and general and sundry right-wing fools. I don't know. That's kind of like trying to talk about the grand existential philosophy of Jethro Bodine, isn't it? Yeah, that's what I thought, too. But, you know what my biggest concern about this weather is? And it has... My biggest concern about this weather is, at this point, the second semester of my kid's school year is being called on account of snow. No school yesterday, no school today, no school tomorrow. Meanwhile, the old-timers around here that I talk to say, I don't understand how they keep calling these school classes off. Back when I went to school, we had a bus that run what had chains on it, and it had to be nigh a blizzard for us to not... But this is also what happens when you take community schools and close them down in the name of consolidated schools that, even on the best of dry surface circumstances, require a three-hour round-trip ride to and from the little red consolidated schoolhouse. That's why. And then, of course, you have to consider that a lot of the consolidation is going on, especially in southern West Virginia and all over Appalachia and the coal fields, because we're trying to do everything in our power, not we, but they, trying to do everything in their power to depopulate the region to make, you know, Appalachia safe for the coal industry. Now, that may sound paranoid, but it is damned well true. They've put it on paper. They really, really have. And at this rate, you know, I think if you added up, my kids have been home from school more than they've been at school, and it's not because they've been sick, it's because of the weather. Because various and sundry financially strapped school districts are absolutely snookered when it comes to dealing with things like transportation issues and fuel costs. And why is that? Well, we can't have no new taxes. Taxes is sinful, and Jesus don't like the taxes. Don't you remember there in the good book when they said, Jesus, should we pay our taxes? And Jesus said, hell no, no new taxes. Oh, wait, he didn't say that. Well, that's okay. The right-wingers will pretend that he said that because they're very good at making up stuff that... you know, never actually got said, whether it's by Jesus or James Madison or Hamilton or Franklin or Washington, Lincoln, Jefferson, you name it. They just make crap up. Consider wall builders, as was referenced on one of the nightly programs last night, I think Olbermann's. Yeah, if you can't find something in the founding documents of the United States that agree with your philosophy and principles, well, you're a Christian, so just lie about it, because God will let you. Sheesh. But it's true. That is how they behave. Man, right at showtime, there wasn't hardly a soul, inside the chat room, and I was the only person there, and then boom, 6 o'clock Eastern time start. I was sitting here looking at one of the new names in the room, Bleeding Heart. 6 o'clock Eastern time hitting, bang, 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 bang. The chat room starts filling up, which is just so cool to see. If you've never been to the headonradionetwork.com chat room, why not? This is good fun, and it's a great little community of folks in there. Bleeding Heart's in there. I'm in there. Chino Debs is in there. Cobwebs is in there. Darlene's in there. ELO Sue is in there. MM's in there. And Osborne Inc., intrepid journalist Matt Osborne, is in the room. So come on by. And since I've been mentioning at the end of the program lately, I'll mention it at the front end tonight, and hopefully maybe something good will happen out of it. It is the 11th day of February. In four more days, our monthly fundraising goal should be at $1,000. It ain't nowhere near it. We're not in the same neighborhood. We're not in the same county with $1,000 for the month of February. And listen, I'm not kidding. This is what it takes to keep us going. Air America fell apart because, their first bankruptcy, they fell apart because they couldn't gin up $84,000 a day. $84,000 a day. It just makes me laugh. $84,000 a day. $84,000 a day would run the horn for two flipping years at least. And we could pay people. So there's a PayPal button. I know you're sick of doing this. I'm sick of doing this. But it's apparently what has to be done in order to keep things going. There's a PayPal button. Head on radionetwork.com. Click contribute. PayPal button's there. And so is the snail mail address if you just want to send it. So do feel free if you wish. That is, if you wish for the horn to continue broadcasting and being here. Because we can't sell you anything. We can, however, offer you something. There are a few remaining. Magnificent, for the love of West Virginia prints, lovingly hand-printed, designed, and prepared by our dear friend Diane up in New York City. She's in the chat room periodically. And there are a few left, and you know, for the low contribution of $75, you can have one of these hand numbered, limited edition, and absolutely a beautiful addition to any wall, any desk, where you might want to display the fact that you're aware of the Appalachian Apocalypse. Oh, there it is in the chat room now. Display the fact that you're aware of the Appalachian Apocalypse and that you're making yourself a part of the solution to ending the nightmare that is mountaintop removal in Appalachia. Maybe try it. It's something you'll enjoy just having to look at, because Diane did such a beautiful, beautiful job with the finding the John Muir quote and putting the image together. You know, the mountains are snow-capped. Well, they're not just snow-capped here in West Virginia right now. They're just snowed under. And to see the Appalachians in snow is something exquisite. On the other hand, to see a mountaintop removal site in snow is to look at that a vision of hell frozen over. So where do we go tonight? Well, I'll tell you where we go. First of all, just to, again, this is one of those things that I put on my Twitter feed. Go and read, and I found it over at Alternet, but it's at consortiumnews.com originally, by Robert Perry, who has such a brilliant take on issues like this. Go read Robert Perry's, not right now, Corporate Media's Cave In to Liberal Bias Attacks Pose a Real Threat to Our Democracy. Subheaded, The Right Has Convinced Americans That the News Media Has a Liberal Bias Lending Cover to the Neocon Leanings of the Washington Post and Palin's Propaganda. Go read this. Robert Perry, who we will be having live on the air from the Seneca 2 lecture later this month, and hopefully we'll get to talk to him a little bit, and you'll hear him talk about some of these issues, hopefully. But Robert Perry has distilled this issue to a level of something approaching perfection. And if you want the living embodiment of an example of exactly what he's talking about, you need only go to today's Washington Post, where you can see, and I do hope you've not had your dinner yet, or maybe I hope it's been a while since you ate, because it'll put you off your supper. You need to see David Broder's sickening sycophancy over, of all people, because remember, David Broder is supposed to be a liberal. David Broder has penned this thing that is positively disgusting about how serious and real and all of that Sarah Palin is. I don't know what happens inside the brain of a David Broder. He really is the embodiment of what the folks over at Crooks and Liars refer to as a villager. Now this is a guy who makes a nice living writing for the Washington Post as an op-ed columnist. And once upon a time was viewed as having liberal street cred. The snows that obliterated Washington in the past week interfered with many scheduled meetings, but they did not prevent the delivery of one important political message. Take Sarah Palin seriously. Really? When she comes driving on the stage in that little bitty car and gets out with the floppy shoes and the fright wig and the button and the red nose. Take Sarah Palin seriously. The title of this column, by the way, is Sarah Palin Displays Her Pitch-Perfect Populism. David, do us broadcasters a favor and leave out the alliterative, the pee-popping headlines. Nah, he didn't write it. Pitch-perfect populism. Learning not to pop one's peas when one is in broadcasting is a very, very important skill, one which I am still struggling in a sort of Zen fashion to master. But he says, her lengthy Saturday night keynote address to the National Tea Party Convention in Nashville and her debut on the Sunday morning talk show circuit with Fox News' Chris Wallace showed off a public figure at the top of her game, a politician who knows who she is and how to sell herself, even with notes on her palm. This was not the first time that Palin has impressed me. I gave her high marks for her vice presidential acceptance speech in St. Paul. But then, and always throughout that campaign, she was laboring to do more than establish her own place. She was selling a ticket headed by John McCain against formidable Democratic opposition and burdened by the legacy of the Bush administration. Much more of this, and I'm into the tequila, I'm warning you. Blessed with an enthusiastic audience of conservative... Let me see if I can do this without breaking into laughter. Blessed with an enthusiastic audience of conservative activists... By that, does he mean a frothing at the mouth rabble of knuckle walkers, mouth breathers, racists, birthers, deathers, tenthers? Yeah, that's what he means. Palin used the Tea Party gathering and coverage on the cable networks to display the full repertoire she... And you know what? And this back references to the Robert Perry column. The right wing is forever referring to people like David Broder as the liberal media. God almighty, Andrew Breitbart couldn't have written a writ. Did I say writ? Andrew Breitbart couldn't have written a more glowing, sycophantic puff piece on Sarah Palin had he been wearing knee pads. Let's see, touching on national security, economics, fiscal and social policy, and every other area where she could draw a contrast with Barack Obama and point up what Republicans see as vulnerabilities in Washington. Are we talking about the same speech? I saw a blithering idiot. How's that Hopi-Changey thing working out for you there? Hopi-Changey. Yeah, that's the liberal media, just in case you were wondering. David Broder doing for Sarah Palin what Monica did for Bill. Yeah, that liberal media. Weird. And yet at the same time that David Broder writes that her invocation of conservative principles and common sense solutions was perfectly conventional, at the same time he's writing that, there's an actual honest-to-God conservative Republican who attended the same event, actually attended, and that person being Jonathan Kay from Newsweek, calls himself a mainstream conservative, and writes the following. I found this, our buddy Dave Nywert over at Crooks and Liars had this. He quotes Jonathan Kay at Newsweek saying, after I spent the weekend at the Tea Party National Convention in Nashville, it has become clear to me that the movement is dominated by people whose vision of the government, listen, this ain't some liberal, this ain't the liberal media, this is a conservative, this is a Reagan Republican, this is a McCain voter, okay? It has become clear to me that the movement is dominated by people whose vision of the government is conspiratorial and dangerously detached from reality. It's more John Birch than John Adams. And Dave Nywert quotes Jonathan Kay as sort of laying out his conservative street cred. I consider myself a conservative and arrived at this conference as a paid-up, rank-and-file attendee, not one of the bemused New York Times types with a media pass. But I also happen to be writing a book for HarperCollins that focuses on 9/11 conspiracy theories, so I have a pretty good idea where the various screws and nuts can be found in the great toolbox of American political life. Within a few hours of Nashville, I could tell that what I was hearing wasn't just random rhetorical mortar fire being launched at Obama and his political allies. The salvos followed the established script of New World Order conspiracy theories, Alex Jones, courtesy phone, which have suffused the dubious right-wing fringes of American politics since the days of the John Birch Society. Now, you know what? When Jonathan Kay, who says he's a con, writes that kind of stuff, I'm inclined to believe him. Not because it affirms my prejudices, but because the guy has a right, being a so-called conservative, to talk about what is and what ain't. Just as we here can talk about the fact that in no wise is Barack Obama anything that we would ever recognize as a liberal, no matter how loudly those self-same damn near John Bircher teabaggers scream that he is. How's that socialism thing working out for you, dare hey? Sorry, I'm in Wisconsin again. But that's not all. That's not all, because also in the Post today, E.J. Dionne. Everybody is trying to psychoanalyze the birthers and the baggers and the deathers and the tenthers, all of whom sort of fall under the broad rubric of the Tea Party movement. And E.J. Dionne thinks he's got a diagnosis. Hint to E.J. Dionne, if you are trying to analyze the Tea Party movement and you do not have in your hand, while you are doing your work, an unabridged copy of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 4th edition, you will not be successful at analyzing the teabaggers. You just won't. But he writes that he doesn't think that it's all about the racism. Now, you and I both know that the very cancerous core of the teabag movement is racism. But Dionne writes, something else is going on in the Tea Party movement, and it has deep roots in our history. Really? Anti-statism, a profound mistrust of power in Washington, dates all the way to the anti-federalists who opposed the Constitution because they saw it concentrating too much authority in the central government. This was, of course, after the Articles of Confederation had failed for want of any single binding central authority. Had the Articles of Confederation persisted, I have no doubt whatsoever that the 13 original states would have been quickly balkanized into little regional nations that would just immediately have been gobbled up by France, Spain, and England all over again. He says, at any given time, perhaps 20 to 25% of Americans can be counted on to denounce anything Washington does as a threat to our traditional liberties. Well, you know what? That doesn't validate that 20 to 25%. Because most of the people who do that kind of thing, especially whenever the word traditional is involved, generally have no idea what they're talking about. It's that Onion article all over again. Man passionate about what he thinks Constitution says but doesn't. And then, of all things, oh, for the love of God, E.J. Dionne writes, the purest expression of this disposition has come from Representative Ron Paul. Oh, Margaret, get a net. In 2008, Paul strenuously criticized President Bush's proposed bank bailout for propping up a failed system so the agony lasts longer. Without a bailout, Paul conceded, it would be a bad year. But this way, it's going to be a bad decade. Could Ron Paul have been more wrong? Well, if he'd kept talking, he could have. This is another one of those anarcho-Randian punks, Ron Paul. You know, just let the free market fix it, and damn the ones who die, they obviously weren't strong enough to survive. It's absolutely... It's stunning. It's stunning to see these people who are supposed to be liberals opining on what it means to be a teabagger. And also in Dave Nywert's column, it's just too much crazy for this early in the show. Sorry, can't do it. So there's that. And you are welcome to opine on it at will. And then this, and then we'll go to the phones. You know the number, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Trying to do a better job of putting that information out there as the audience grows and grows and grows. So folks can know that they are invited, encouraged to be a part of this discussion and this dialogue. It was last night, night before, I forget which. I think it was night before last, when the whole business with Robert Gibbs, White House press secretary, having written hope and change on the palm of his hand and making light of Sarah Palin, and I simply suggested, don't do that. Don't do that. Build an infrastructure of liberal radio, and we'll do that. We'll do that kind of heavy lifting. We're up for that kind of fight. You're the serious guy. You're the White House spokesman. And you know what? You're a Democratic White House spokesman, and you are going to get eaten alive. Guess what? He did. I hate being right about this kind of crap. But it's not any kind of magic. It just comes from a few years of watching how the Johnny-on-the-spot Washington press corps operates. Oh, Muffy, we've had our 3-martini lunch and a couple of shots of laudanum. Let's do go over and cover the little communist, the little communist in the White House for a bit. Yes, yes, I know we gave him a pass when he was George W. Bush, but that was because he was godly and had upstanding values and would turn us over his knees and spank us like we like it real good if we didn't fawn and lap at his heels. But we don't have to do that with this little socialist. Come now, Muffy. Let's go and rough up the press secretary. NBC's Chuck Todd said, I was surprised by the stunt myself. And CNN's Suzanne Melveaux, according to John Purr at Kirks and Liars, said, so much for changing the tone. Now, see, Mr. Gibbs, you're a Democrat. The rules... You don't get a pass on I-O-K-I-Y-A-R because you ain't a R, you're a D. In your case, it's I-O-K-I-Y-A-D, and what that means is it ain't okay if you're a Democrat. So, you know, just another day of being right. The curse of Cassandra. But you know what? If you listen to this program, there's one thing guaranteed. You will be ahead of the curve. Maura writing in on David Broder, Bob, you need to forgive Grandpa. He hasn't visited Earth in a few years, and the one day he beamed down, he saw Sarah and thought she winked at him. And the fact of it is, you know, David Broder has to be out to lunch. Yeah, when Tweety Matthews calls her scary, calls her an empty vessel. I mean, we're talking about Chris Matthews here, okay? Calls her an empty vessel, scary, capable only of being filled by whatever advisors put next to her. Yeah. You know Broder. And then from Ron and Raleigh, what is it about white men of a certain age and their inability to see that Sarah Palin is a blithering idiot? Has all the blood drained from the big head to the little head? Just asking. Yeah, I guess for men of a certain age, she's a sort of Viagra. Sad. The magic just isn't there. It isn't working for me. Because there's no, I know that, I guess it's because I know the difference between magic and retail snake oil. But we got more fun stuff to do this evening, but let's go to the phones first and foremost. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, a little piece of breaking news. Former President Clinton is in the hospital.
Oh, no, what? Chest pains?
He was having chest pains, and he went in to have a stent put in, and hopefully that will take care of the issue. It seems to be anyway.
Where is he?
What?
Where is he?
Let me bring that up. I put it up on the main page. He's in New York.
Okay. But I'm sure he's getting the best care, best health care that the American people can provide. And I'm not being snarky that. I want him to have it.
Yeah, I don't have the name of the hospital exactly. Not without. Anyway, they went and did an angioplasty on him and the whole nine yards. But he seems to be doing fine.
Good.
Have you been able to see the episodes of Countdown on the web lately?
I watched last night's, and it was just the pure gold from start to finish. Right down to the Sports Illustrated, the curse of the Sports Illustrated cover issue. That was just
right.
I laughed myself silly.
It sure died. What I was calling in about was that Cheyenne River reservation issue.
You're talking about the leasing?
No, the storms in South Dakota.
Oh, okay. No, I'm sorry.
Those storms happened 12 days after the Haiti earthquake. That just tells you how long ago this happened. They've got no water, no electricity, no power. They got nothing. And my mother came from North Dakota, so did my grandfather. He gets frimping cold in South Dakota. It really, really does. I mean,
nothing to slow the wind. Yeah, just.
Yeah. They're asking for shoes. When I went up to the site day before yesterday to donate, they said the goal was $35,000 and they had raised $5,000. Before the show was over, they had gone up to $17,000. Would you care to know what it's up to now?
Yes, please.
$248,895.
And that's right here in good old U.S. of A.
That is basically Keith Olbermann's people. The thing is, I called. Washington shut down, but since I have a Skype account, I called Tim Johnson's office in South Dakota. They had no idea.
You kid. It's in his state.
Yeah. And the only thing I called was to say, hey, guys, don't you think you should maybe see if you couldn't get FEMA to get a, you know, get a disaster declaration here?
And, you know, I'm being informed, just got a note from David in Tennessee that the Bureau of Indian Affairs has, for all intents and purposes, completely abandoned that reservation. 3 weeks, yeah. No power, no water. Okay, Tim Johnson doesn't know about it. Where are the airlifts?
Where are the what?
Where are the airlifts? Where are the fundraising campaigns in those thousand points of light and the churches that are supposed to take care of all this, because we don't need no government welfare?
Well, the fundraising campaign is coming out of Keith Olbermann's countdown.
I understand that, but what I'm asking is how can this happen literally under our own noses? Is it just overshadowed by Haiti, or do we just, if Haiti hadn't happened, would we just, do we just not give up?
I'm inclined to think that nobody has covered this.
I'm ashamed of myself that I don't know this. How did I miss this?
I called my own local people here and said, hey, have you guys heard any of this? Uh-uh. You guys going to cover this? Uh-uh. The media's not interested.
Nice.
You got men, women, old women, old people. You got babies. They're freezing to death.
Well, Colonel John Chivington rides again.
Yeah. Mitts make lice.
Stunning, Susan, stunning. I got to find out more, and I will do my best to read up on it so that we can all be better informed.
Another piece of appalling news is from our friends over at TPM.
Muckraker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems that at the highest levels of the U.S. military,
mm-hmm.
they are quietly exploring ways to strip citizenship of U.S. citizens.
Yeah, you sent that to me, and I read it, and it's that's really nasty.
Yeah,
and of course, it's the military having the discussion, Susan.
Yeah,
trying to put in place what Steve Clemens says is a legal framework that would permit the U.S. government to strip American citizenship from terrorists. Now, that begs the question, how would you determine what a terrorist is? And
who does it?
Pardon?
And who determines that?
Right, and what kind of a proceeding makes that determination?
Yeah, is there such a thing as due process, maybe?
Literally making stateless persons of people. And do you get to do that before or after they're convicted?
Yeah, and it's just, this is appalling. This is just appalling.
And this isn't the Bush Pentagon that's studying that.
No, this is the Obama Pentagon. The more things change, the more things stay the same.
Meet the new boss.
Yeah.
Same as the old boss.
On that wonderful note, I shall leave you to your snow. Enjoy it.
Yeah, I'd enjoy it. I'd enjoy it more from a distance, I think. Thanks, Susan. Have a good night.
My best to you and Agnes and Doodle.
All right. Thank you very kindly. All right, and you know, I think I will be getting a hot cup of tea brought my way here in a little bit, which will be very nice.
Okay. Love to everybody.
All right, later, Susan. Bye now.
Bye bye.
From Columbia City, Oregon, that is News Ninja Susan, and do please remember there was, when I said, you know, hey, where, you know, where's all the aid that should be flowing out west at this news of which I am ashamed not to know? See, my cable system here doesn't offer me MSNBC, and that means I have to remember to go and look it up online. And I got Fox, though. Sorry, they're not covering it. But no, there was an answer sort of tucked inside that rhetorical question of where, you know, where's the relief? Where are the helicopters? Where are the where's the humanitarian aid to that reservation? You want to know where it is? It's the same place that the amphibious craft were when Katrina hit the Gulf Coast. It's in the middle of some godforsaken desert or some high, dry, frozen mountain pass in the Hindu Kush. The National Guard that could respond to a tragedy like what's happening in the Dakotas, in South Dakota in particular, is in Iraq. Or it's in Afghanistan. And this is the blood price paid by people who do not have a dog in that fight. A crippled relief structure. Ripples within ripples within ripples. And for want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of the shoe, the horse was lost. And for want of the horse, the rider was lost. That's a hell of a lot to swallow. And, let's go on to the phones. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. This is your correspondent from South of Strange.
Hey, what's up, Matt Osborne?
Well, I sent you a link to the video that I did yesterday with Mr. Harris Shepherd. Did you get that?
Yes, I did. Interesting fellow.
It's interesting listening to the interview, especially the end of the interview.
And by the way, for those who are scoring at home, that would be Taz Shepherd, who has decided to run for the Alabama 5th Congressional District seat against Turncoat. He's running in the Democratic primary first, but hopefully then against Democratic Turncoat Parker Griffith. Right?
That is correct. Mr. Taz Shepherd, his first name is spelled T-A-Z-E, but in fact it is pronounced Taz. I think I feel Tazmania coming on, which is better than moron, because we have Mo Brooks running on the right, the teabagger candidate, who is probably going to beat Parker Griffith in the primary, which will be really hilarious. Because apparently Mr. Griffith has received quite a substantial amount of money from the National Party. And, of course, the National Party has flipped and is using exactly the opposite sort of line from what they were using, you know, just a year and a half ago against Mr. Griffith. So it is an interesting turn of events. I am putting something in my CD tray right now. I'm going to send you a song, by the way, because you were just talking about what goes on in the Indian Reservation. I think you might be interested in this track. This is by a group called the Pine Hill Haints, and I think your listeners will enjoy it. I'm going to have to get it, of course, uploaded and sent to you, but in the meantime, I wanted to alert your listeners to what I sense coming out of this interview with Taz Shepherd. I think that we have a kind of, by the way, Monica says hello.
Hey to Monica.
She, of course, is my intrepid camera girl who helps me out with these interviews. And one thing that Mr. Shepherd told us that I found very interesting was that he sees his opportunity against the Republican candidate by reminding the voters of their interests. Because Huntsville, as you know, the metropolitan area around Huntsville in the middle of AL5.
Yeah, otherwise known as the North Alabama Sprawl.
Right, and it is, of course, also known as Rocket Town, USA. We have Redstone Arsenal. We have research centers and so forth. Basically, our economy in this district revolves around federal funding. And TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, it is basically this district.
Oh, the entire district is within the jurisdiction of the Tennessee Valley Authority. Absolutely.
Exactly. So I wanted to ask him some questions about that. Would it be all right to play this for your listeners?
If you think it'll come across.
I think it might.
Okay, or is this out of the video?
You can play the whole video if you want to, but it's just the last segment that I find the most interesting.
Okay, hold on. Let me just bring the video up because the audio will probably be considerably better that way.
Okay.
Heading over to OsborneInc.com right now. Trying to get to, okay. So here's the Taz Shepherd interview. Let me get it going. Any idea where I should cue it to?
You should probably cue it. Let's see. Go ahead and pull it here. Let's put it at. It's right about the 4-minute mark or so.
Okay. Let's see. It'll take a minute, but.
Your listeners are going to like this, I guarantee.
Okay, here we go.
Well, you know, it's kind of hard for me to say what I would do with anyone up there until I get there, simply because the faces may change and everything. Now, let me say this. I do not agree with everything that Speaker Pelosi has said publicly. I am not a Pelosi candidate, and I'll just be clear of that. But I would work with whoever is there, including her. I would want to be friendly with everyone, including her. I'd be friendly with the Republican minority leader as well. The point to me is you can get along with people and you can get results from people without antagonizing them, and especially without insulting them in public. And we've seen what that's gotten for us lately, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
Okie dokie.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting tack. He pivots on the whole Pelosi question and pivots to, hey, we have to get along in Washington or else Huntsville's not going to get anything. Appealing directly to the interests of this area. I find that interesting. It's a pretty good start. What do you think?
Well, I'll be interested to hear. I know you asked him about H.R. 1310 and he pled no knowledge of it.
Well, he probably didn't have knowledge of it.
Oh, I doubt if he does. But the fact of the matter is, he is smack dab in the middle of TVA, and how he responds to issues relating to coal ash, and frankly, it's going to be critically important. And look at the coal ash that's being, and John, our buddy John Waffen, a Hurricane Creek keeper down out of Tuscaloosa County, has done such a magnificent job covering what's being done down in Perry County, Alabama, with literally toxic waste being dumped in landfills that are not meant to contain toxic waste, an absolute environmental and human rights nightmare unfolding as we speak. It will be important that if he's to get support in the Democratic primary, that he get on the right side of that and do it in a hurry.
Yes, and that's why I immediately after the interview, he asked me questions, which I found good. That's very good of a politician to actually ask questions and get informed. And he wanted to know more about it. And I told him all about Coal River Mountain. I told him sort of a précis of what I have learned about the subject of mountaintop removal. And he was very interested in what I had to say, especially when I told him about the windmill. When I explained that you could power an entire city off of this mountain that's about to be destroyed, he thought that sounded like a travesty.
Well, I hope he continues to think that way.
You'll notice that I also asked him about renewable energy, green energy, and TVA. So, I think we have a candidate here who might actually be amenable.
Well, and naturally, this guy couldn't say, "Oh, I just think the world of Nancy Pelosi. I want to have lunch with her." Because that that's just political death.
And
I'm sure somewhere along the way he's going to have to talk about his conservative family values.
Of course he's going to. That's the nature of the place where he lives and where he's running.
And this is also, for those who keep up with sort of political family ties and so forth, this is John Sparkman's grandson, Alabama Senator John Sparkman.
So, yes, this guy, I think, has the skills. I think he can do it. Of course, I'm going to interview the other two people running for the Democratic nomination. And we are going to find out what's going on in AL5. This is going to be an interesting race to watch because, of course, we have Mr. Parker Griffith, who appears to, first of all, he was running out of money. If you've been keeping up with left in Alabama, you know that his coffers were emptying. People were wanting their money back. The Democratic campaign committee actually was encouraging Democrats who had given to him to ask for their money back. It got very bad, very embarrassing, and on top of that, it took 47 days for the Republican Party to give him his first committee assignment. So the guy had
not in a hurry.
47 days.
John Boehner. Parker, who?
This is who we're dealing with. We're dealing with a bunch of idiots because this is their golden boy. This is their turncoat golden boy that demonstrates that Democrats are trying to take over the universe for George Soros or something. And this guy, what did he do? He turned coat, and he was going to be the golden boy, and now it doesn't even look like he's going to get out of the primary.
He ran through the
brush. All he has is a lot of money. He's going to run a lot of advertisements, but I don't think it's going to work.
Run away. Yeah. Hey, by the way, while I do have you, totally separate topic, Matt, but, you know, the other day you were telling us, you gave us all that little lesson in basic Arabic. Sort of peeling Glenn Beck like a grape one evening, and you mentioned the little dog-eared copy of an Arabic dictionary that you still have, courtesy of the United States government, the people of the United States of America.
Yes. Right here on my desk.
Yeah, I want to advise you. You know, you might want to put a comic book over that on your desk or something like that, and you certainly don't want to be taking it out and reading it anywhere near the entry point to an aircraft. You familiar with this story?
I am familiar with this story, yes, but go ahead.
The ACLU, God bless them, has filed a brand spanking new lawsuit naming as plaintiff Nick George. This also from over at Crooks and Liars, Suzanne Ito reporting. Nick George is a Pomona College student. I assume that that's Pomona College, California. He was getting on a plane. He's a physics major, Nick George is. He's getting on a plane at Philadelphia International Airport. Okay, now I got my doubts about Pomona. See what happens when I work on the fly? but he was getting on the plane at Philadelphia International Airport and going through security. And empty your pockets, sir. You know how it is. You got to take your shoes off, take your socks off, get your toe jam inspected, empty your pockets, that kind of stuff. Sir, is that a Zippo lighter? You know, that kind of thing.
Yes, and through the X-ray machine, of course.
Right, and he empties his pockets, and he's got these flashcards in Arabic because he's learning Arabic. You know, he's a college student. There's all kinds of stuff you can learn there at the college. Even Arabic, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. I'll never forget when my high school erupted in an uproar because this was, of course, back in the Cold War days of the late days of Jimmy Carter, early days of Ronald Reagan. There was an absolute uproar because there was a talk about having a Russian class. We don't need to be teaching no communist language to our good little Alabama boys and girls. Well, now it's Arabic.
It's so stupid. I mean, look.
So
9/11 was when? 9/11 was in 2001. It's 2010. We're going into our ninth year after this.
Yeah, 8.5 years ago.
Has there been a single effort to teach Arabic to high school students? This part of the world that we are apparently going to be involved in.
Only at the madrasa that Barack Obama was able to attend when he didn't have no long-form birth certificate.
That's right. Of course.
Of course, because
you know he probably wakes up in the morning, looks over at his wife, and says "Salam alaikum."
Here's the funny thing.
But wait,
Arabic is a Semitic language. Did you know that?
Oh, absolutely. It actually falls under the broad category. You know, we English speakers, German speakers, French speakers, Italian. Those are all Indo-European languages.
That's correct.
Arabic, Hebrew, Aramaic, and some others all fall under the broad language tree branch known as Nilo-Saharan.
Correct. That's correct. As a matter of fact, at one time, Arabic and Hebrew either were one language or they share the same root language.
Right.
That's why so many words in my dictionary
Barak,
are
Baruch,
also available in Hebrew.
Salam, Shalom.
Yes, Sabbath day. Sabah, Sabat.
Yeah, I know.
In Arabic is Seba.
Die, heretic!
Yeah, there you go. I'm heretic. Yes,
So this young man unloads his pockets, and out pop his Arabic flashcards.
Arabic flashcards.
Yeah, Arabic flashcards in Arabic, you know, with things like dog.
And were they exploding Arabic flashcards?
No, they weren't even on flash paper. And he didn't have them in his underwear. But by God, they pulled him aside for secondary screening, and they gave him what was it called? He was subjected to an intense interrogation, and this is the beautiful thing that he was questioned by a TSA supervisor, and this is the line of questioning. Couldn't pay to have it written. Honest to God. You know who did 9/11?
Osama bin Laden, sir.
Do you know what language he spoke?
Arabic.
That's right. Now, do you see why these cards would be suspicious?
Yeah, the Arabic language is going to... blow up the plane, right?
Knowledge is dangerous.
Knowledge is dangerous. Well, hey, you know what I said about Sarah Palin in my video. I caught that little bit of her on somebody's laptop when I crashed the tea party, was where she was saying that her son has never watched C-SPAN in his entire young life. And everybody cheered, and the old woman standing next to me goes, yay. Ignorance is strength, Bob. Ignorance is strength.
Ignorance is freedom, citizen.
That's right. Listen, Bob, I just had to tell you. I just posted this up this afternoon. I was really upset about this. Have you heard about this, what is this called? Is it the Thomas More Law Center? Have you heard of this?
Yes.
The Thomas More Law Center, you know, they bill themselves as the religious answer to the American Civil Liberties Union. And, they're filing a lawsuit alleging that the hate crimes laws named after Matthew Shepard are an affront to their religious freedom. Have you heard about this?
Yes, I have.
This is up at the Raw Story today. This is the money quote for me. Okay, Mr. Richard Thompson is his name. He's the chief counsel to Thomas More Law Center. He says, of the 1.38 million crimes reported in the U.S. by the FBI in 2008, only 243 were considered as motivated by the victim's sexual orientation. The sole purpose of this law is to criminalize the Bible and use the threat of federal prosecutions and long jail sentences to silence Christians from expressing their biblically-based religious belief that homosexual conduct is sin. So I couldn't stand it. So I threw up a picture of Judge Roy Moore standing next to his Ten Commandments graven idol, and I wrote this. Sir, I have just learned of your statement in the Michigan Group's lawsuit attempting to undo the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Act. I should like to repeat the pertinent passage here in which you claim there's no need to extend hate crimes definition, and then I do. Translation. Help! Help! I'm being oppressed!
Bloody peasant.
Mr. Thompson, I can only suppose that by Christians expressing their biblically based belief, you mean the part that involves kidnapping homosexuals, transporting them to the middle of nowhere, and beating them to death, which is what happened to Matthew Shepard, and which has always been considered a crime in the United States of America. The law named for the late Mr. Shepard extends some special penalties, but is actually designed to let local law enforcement officials call on the technology and expertise of federal agencies to solve such crime. Your statement suggests that biblically-based beliefs could reasonably consist of allowing murderers to get away with murder. Problem. There's this commandment in your Bible that ends with "shalt not kill" and begins with "thou." Having read your Bible from cover to cover over the years, I am convinced of the opposite, that in fact the Lord and Savior of the Christian religion was rather militantly nonviolent. What your words suggest is that communities far from the urban center become havens for murderers. I doubt the people of Michigan or the United States of America would condone such a view. In fact, I'd venture that even the shiniest hinterlands and darkest hollers, there aren't many American communities that would agree with your implication. Personally, I find it rather evil. Your Thomas More Foundation advertises itself as an antidote to the ACLU, but in fact it seems a curious judicial activism to undo the very foundations of justice in America. Nor am I agreeing to the presence of graven images in state courts. The Athenians carved their laws in stone above the People's Assembly so they could all see them, and we know how that turned out. What the Ten Commandments represent isn't a godly source of law, but a way of codifying laws that apply to everyone in the same way, i.e., equal protection. Compare them to the Code of Hammurabi, which prescribes differing penalties for crimes between sexes and social ranks. I should note that your organization represents a long-running crusade by the same agency that gave us the recent example of judicially active jurisprudence in Citizens United. Fitting the patterns of conservatism, these corporate entities are now elevated to the status of biological ones and released from their shackles just in time for Wall Street to oppose financial reform with billion-dollar ad buys. These corporate persons have remarkable impact on our lives as we eat their food, live in their houses, and work for them. Over the years, the working American has thus become utterly dependent on these unelected and unaccountable corporate citizens. The age of conservative ascendancy saw them admitted new powers over our lives, taking even more control. We have been warned against Big Brother, while the little brothers were being anointed. You advocate murder in the name of a movement that serves the agenda of corporate slavery, which is why I would like to offer you a nice big cup of shut the fuck up. Sincerely, Matt Osborne.
Wow. Just wow.
I just had to get that off my chest, Bob.
Sometimes you do, Matt. Sometimes you do. And, it's this crazy-making world. And it's not the world. I get emails from time to time from people out, and I read one the other night, from people outside the confines of the United States who look at us as though they are looking at some sort of carnival freak show. And it's not because they're some sort of elitist. It's because they cannot believe that the United States has sunken to the place that it is in, where no one dare speak any sort of factuality for fear of being called liberal.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, it's sad and disgusting.
Yes, and we have to stop running away from that word, don't we?
I have. I quit running a long time ago. And in fact, I turned. There's a great quote from some general out there who said, "When you are surrounded, there is only one way to break out, and that is by attacking. Any breakout is not a retreat; it is an attack." And
it's
when you turn around, thinking of Sun Tzu,
who said,
"No, actually, it was an American general in Korea, a Marine general." But at any rate,
Jesse Fuller.
It was at Chosin Reservoir. I happened to be reading up on it the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
okay.
And that's what I do. That's what this is all about, is turning around, planting our feet, and saying, take your best shot, you rotten bastards, because once you're done, we're going to beat the piss out of you. And I
like that philosophy.
Well, it's the only way you can possibly begin to deal with a bully. It is the only thing that bullies understand.
Yes, the only thing that bullies understand. You remember our friend down there in Florence, and you remember when he was little. I don't know if you've heard this story from our friend down there, but we have a mutual friend down there, and I'm going to call him Keith just for this purpose. But Keith was bullied rather badly by a neighborhood bully, and his father said, I want you to take this stick, and I want you to go hit that bully in the head with it. And our friend ran up to the bully and said, I'm sorry, and hit him. And the bully never bothered him again.
I'd forgotten about the I'm sorry part. Yeah. Whack! No more bully problem.
No more bully problem.
Now, I'm going to sing a verse of Kumbaya here, and then I'm going to beat the piss out of you, all right?
Yeah. The thing is, what you can't do, you can't just turn that to politics and say, we're going to start hitting Republicans on the head. You're never going to see Barack Obama do that. I don't think we want.
No, and I agree. I agree very much with a lot of the stuff that Cy Khan was putting forward a couple of nights ago. That's a visceral lizard brain approach to politics that I'm just guilty of, and I just have to deal with it. And it's a personal failing. But so too is a personal failing that is a matter of constantly running away. You know, we've all seen the man who shot Liberty Valance.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, Lee Marvin in that magnificent role. And Jimmy Stewart being, you know, the coward, and John Wayne.
That's probably one of the best Westerns.
Sometimes just standing up to them. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes for good theater. It'd make for great C-SPAN to see somebody just punch the snot out of John Boehner down on the floor of the House of Representatives. Hell, I'd buy tickets to it. But it wouldn't advance anything. But most of this comes back to that essay by Robert Perry, and this idea of the mordant fear that just reverberates throughout the right wing throughout our side of the right wing, that, you know, if they'll call us liberal again, and then we'll wet ourselves and cry.
Yes. You can't let a bully determine your language. You can't let them affect the way you act. But I have to tell you, I've seen some encouraging signs. Did you see that Nancy Pelosi is going to hold one of these symbolic votes this week? She's going to force the Republicans to vote on the issue of privatizing Social Security.
Ooh.
The sort of thing that the Republicans were doing all the time to Democrats when they were in charge. And, of course, when the Democratic majority took over in 2006, they said, oh, we're not going to do things that way. We're going to be better than you. Well, I think the Republicans have earned this. That's the interesting thing. By not doing this for 3 years, the Republicans have earned it. By the same token, I mean, look at what's happening right now with this question time that we're going to have with Barack Obama and the senator. This is going to be very interesting to me. The Republicans have earned every bit of this. And we've got signals coming out of even the White House that they're going to use reconciliation. So I like it. I like the new approach, and it's timely. But it couldn't have happened until we had a year of intransigence, I think.
And the question is there enough time left to make it work?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting as well. We talked a little bit about the way he's splitting up bills, and you're using martial metaphors. So I'll use a martial metaphor. It's as if he's dividing his forces, which, again,
one is always told not to do it.
No, there is a time when you divide your forces. You divide your forces when the enemy has fixed his position and you want to find and exploit a weakness.
Right, exactly. We shall see how it works out. I love the sort of hesitancy that Pumpkinhead John Boehner is manifesting. And I think we may get to that later in the evening because the audio is just precious, and I've got the bumper from hell for it too. Matt Osborne, thanks so much, and we will talk soon.
Bob.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Later. Matt Osborne, North Alabama. He of OsborneInc.com. That's OsborneInc. INK.com, and Matt is always blogging away. There's always something fresh and new on the site, so by all means, go and have a look. He is, after all, a Horn correspondent. So there you go. Onward we go, I think. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Brian from New Hampshire.
Hey, Brian, what's up?
Well, what Matt was alluding to there, I heard that, I perused that very quickly, that story, that this St. Thomas More Law Center, I can't believe they're using that great man. I watched it.
They will pervert anything that they touch, Brian. I think we all just need to come to grips with that.
That great man who gave his life for the law in terms of, it wasn't church law or Catholic law against this new emerging Henry VIII, this dictator, and his Church of England law, which basically it's getting into the story earlier you were calling the Anglican and the Episcopal Church in America. I have a news story from Episcopal Life Online about the Cheyenne Reservation there in South Dakota, the horrible suffering those people are, that many of them have evacuated, yes, about the winter storms that downed an estimated 3,000 utility poles on the reservation alone, leaving many residents of the Cheyenne River Sioux Indian Reservation in South Dakota and the Standing Rock Indian Reservation, which spans both North and South Dakota, without power or water. That's going back to January 31st. And in January 31st, the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe declared a state of emergency and requested federal disaster relief funds, food, medical supplies, and generators. Tribal authorities issued a press release saying that an estimated 1,500 homes have been without power for weeks. And, this is shades of Katrina, post-Katrina.
Yeah, that's why I said what I said.
Mississippi, yeah.
All the help that they could have is busy being wasted somewhere in Iraq or Afghanistan.
Right, or it's to provide security for the new corporate thieves to profiteer off of the dead bodies in Haiti, the 250,000 or more, the people there, that nation. Talk about another... A nation that helped make the Louisiana Purchase possible was the defiant nation of Haiti, their black people fighting against their own slavery under the French. And
Napoleon realized that if he couldn't put that down, Napoleon realized if he couldn't put that down, that there's no way that he could hold Louisiana.
And so we see that within a day, we gained more than twice our territorial area. He ceded the Louisiana territories to Thomas Jefferson, and yet Thomas Jefferson never trusted the new Black Republic of Haiti. They were so against them and so untrustworthy. This great, defiant, and proud nation of Haiti.
Jefferson was a Francophile, Brian.
Yeah, so are many Haitians still, despite it all.
Yeah, true.
Despite it all, they speak a very Creole, and they speak whatever I don't know the linguistic background, but like you're just talking with Matt about Semitic, the Arabic and Hebrew being such brotherly languages, really. They're so interrelated anciently, they're so tied together in the primordial past of the Middle East that. But again, the Haitian, the Creole language, and the most polite people I've ever met in Florida it can be a very transient state. It's a beautiful state. My retired beloved parents are down there, and many people. But the nicest people I always meet when I'm down in Florida is the Haitian people there. Maybe they're just so thankful to be out of that godforsaken, island nation, which really could be. If it hadn't been for foreign interventionists, it's not the deal with the devil that Pat Robertson is talking about, this lunatic.
Oh, there was a deal with the devil, all right, but it's not the guy with
the
horns and the tail.
Slavery.
Yeah.
It was French colonial slavery and American intervention. The Marines, they misused our Marines. 1915 to 1934, we occupied Haiti, and the Dominican Republic hasn't done much better either under, it being LBJ and sent the Marines in 1965, and there's been intervention in there. They've been basically our colonies, with a colonial attitude we've had towards South America and Central America. In one of the worst cases of it, perhaps the worst, is Haiti. But going back to St. Thomas More, he must be rolling in his grave. I believe it's in Chelsea, outside of London there, is St. Thomas More. And he was such, his book, Utopia, he wrote it in 1915, 1916, the world... I'm going by the Dover publication of it, Sir Thomas More, Utopia. He was such a liberal. The conservatives try to tack him on as like being a conservative to Catholic tradition and all of this. He hated the absolute. He saw the need for the Lutheran Reformation. He saw the need for, if you ever see the movie The Man for All Seasons, Paul Scofield's great performance in that, and Robert Shaw as Henry VIII. It's so beautifully photographed, but also it tells of a man who truly loved his nation of England, the newly burgeoning, this great kingdom that, you know, we could see what these great island nations like Japan and England and Britain or England, what they've done to the continent, you know, whether it's the Asian continent in the case of Japan or the European continent in the case of England under Henry V and those guys, there's kind of a wild side to those people. And, of course, Robert Shaw, his portrayal of Henry VIII brings that about. And England to me is a rich mix of Celtic and Germanic, you know, a great culture. And a real leading light of that time was St. Thomas More, Sir Thomas More, when he wrote Utopia just after America Vespucci had discovered the West More of the Western Hemisphere and Columbus before, you know, and people were open to a new world and new ideas and what you would call liberal by that standard by the very early 16th century, about 1500 to 15, he was beheaded in 1535, Thomas More. But he was such a liberal in the classical and in the modern progressive sense too.
But he was an opponent. He was an opponent of the Protestant Reformation.
Yes, he was an opponent, but he was not an opponent. He was an opponent also of the Catholic corruption of these priests, these so-called priests with their mistresses and with their, the children that he was a very, he kept to his faith, but he also, if you look at the English Episcopal Anglican Church of today, they've retained, in spite of it all, many Catholic rites, you would call them.
The Episcopal Church, they'll even sit there and tell you, hey, we're Catholic light. We know it.
The Church of England was made mainly to, it's like that this new church of war profiteering and war without end was made to satisfy this inbred blue blood King George W. Bush II. The Church of England was made, I believe, to satisfy this crazed King Henry VIII.
Well, see, I don't think that Henry VIII was crazy. In fact,
no,
he was
crazy, but Robert Shaw shows that he was more of a, he was a well-read. Oh, he was a scholar, but he was a.
Well, see, he was the third or fourth son, if I remember Eugene Finnerman's teaching on this correctly, and he was bred for the church.
Yeah.
And it was only because he had brothers ahead of him, or a brother ahead of him, who died, that Henry VIII, Henry Tudor, was able to ascend to the throne,
right,
and become king of England. Ultimately, it was the act of supremacy that, you know, brought about Thomas More's loss of his head, because he simply would not acknowledge that his sovereign had the right to be the head of the church in England.
And according to, I believe it's in the Shakespeare version, but also it's in the real life of people that knew Henry VIII, the one person he truly respected and truly loved was Thomas More. King Henry VIII was the other. If he wanted an honest response to any question, it would be Thomas More. It wouldn't be anybody else in the government, the Thomas Cromwell, you know.
Well, you know, all over, I think, in England and America both, lawyers on, I guess, Thomas More's feast day or whatever it is, lawyers get together for something called the Red Mass. It's some sort of a marking of Thomas More and his. Because he was, for all intents and purposes, a lawyer. I always found one of the things most interesting about Thomas More, Brian, was the fact that after he had been beheaded and they undressed the body, he was found, you know, his skin was almost rubbed completely off, because through everything, no matter what, he had continued to wear a hair shirt in an act of self-flagellation mortification of the flesh. Yeah, that's the one. And, you know, when I read that, I thought, I don't know. It would be
a more civilized version of what you see the Shiites flagellating themselves in the Muslim religion and some Hindu.
And, yeah, and remember, to this day, to this day, we have at least four and perhaps five members of the Supreme Court of the United States who are all members of Opus Dei.
Yeah.
Now these,
but they've corrupted, I believe, these right-wing, the St. Thomas More Center especially, but Opus Dei too, these right-wing so-called Christians and so-called Catholics, they've corrupted at least a great man like Thomas More is, he was such a liberal, he was not for any of this lawlessness of the George W. Bush, their hero in his regime and his war profiteering, and even King Henry VIII, like you're saying, would be so dishonored, feel so dishonored and hope that he has no familial line that is in anywhere related to the Bush crime family. You know, King Henry, the Tudor family, I don't know, you know, but he was, his sense of honor, he was a, you know, he was a brave man and an honorable man, and he tried every way he could to get Thomas More to escape the headman's axe, you know, to escape that, you know, that is one of the most powerful climatic scenes.
But when a man who has, you know, a deep fundamentalist faith is bent on martyrdom, martyrdom is what will happen.
But he was not a self. He was a very, like you're saying, unassuming man. Like we're talking about, I was talking about Bob Kerry the other last night about the war hero and all of that. But he's not a showy vicious about it. He's not like these Republican, all these congressmen and people. Bob Dornan, you're talking about you like redheads, but I'm sure you don't like the redhead Bob Dornan. He looks like
he's a freak.
The Berserk or Eric the Red, some Viking invader of Ireland. That he looks got that same mad ancestry that's gone way back in to you know primitive times, really. Dark Age times, and that's what Bob Dornan's politics are, because he was a frustrated, I guess he was flying training planes in the, just about the time of the Bay of Pigs. He was an Air Force reservist or Army reservist, and he was a frustrated warrior, supposedly, but he just goes for all the emotional things that he doesn't go with the thinking, the logical, real news events about the Bay of Pigs that shows that the CIA leaders purposely put those poor Cubans into that Bay of Pigs and knew they were going to be overwhelmed, and they were trying to sucker Kennedy into sending in ground forces. They knew how popular Fidel Castro was at that time. If you had done the Bay of Pigs in 1972 or 74 instead of 61, it might have had more effect, because if Castro was losing popularity then, they saw he was a dictator cementing his hold on power and he doing a lot of great things for Cuba, but he was still not a Democrat, but he still has many good points, and that's like you're saying, Henry VIII had many good points in the way he governed England. He was a much more honorable man, and many kings of England were. I always love Alfred the Great. The first truly English king he was to me was an Anglo-Saxon named Alfred the Great. He tried to make peace with the Danish invaders, you know, the Danish.
Oh, you know your history of the island without a doubt.
And Alfred the Great, he was, you know, the original Britons, the Celtic people of England. They when he was defeated very badly in a battle with the Danes, they hid him out, King Alfred, and brought him to safety around the marsh areas leading into Wales and the western part of England. There, but England is such an admixture of people, but there's still, it's like you're saying, the same Indo-European people, and we still can't. You still look at Northern Ireland today, and they've interviewed. I remember seeing there was some Protestant guy. They were talking to him. You know, the wall there between the Orangemen and the Protestant section of Londonderry or Derry, I think it was Londonderry, and the Catholic section. A huge wall. It's just like the green zone of Beirut, Lebanon, between Christians and Muslims. Only it's between two Christian groups there, Protestants and Catholics in Northern Ireland. And he says, well, that's the Celtic area. That's it. Like they're Martians. And I believe that one of the big leaders of the IRA for years in the 1980s, at least a spokesman, his name was Smith. You know, that's a very strongly Anglo-Saxon name to me. And many of the Protestant leaders there, they have strongly Celtic-sounding name or Scottish-sounding names, you know, of Ireland and the north of Ireland, many Scottish settlers. But there are a few, about 10% of Scotland, I believe, is still Catholic. They're not always so strictly Calvinist. As you know, people can stereotype every ethnic group and religious group too much, but St. Thomas More was a man of his time, but he does not deserve to be put in with these fascists.
Oh no, he most assuredly doesn't, Brian, and that's the whole point.
Yeah, I can't understand why they get away with this nonsense.
Well, you know, there's no copyright on the name of Thomas More.
It's the same with Bush's Clean Skies initiative and all.
Well,
look at these rotten fascist bastards
in the Federalist Society.
Yeah.
Does anybody think that Alexander Hamilton would actually sit down and break bread with these monsters?
No, absolutely not. You're absolutely right. It's good to hear another honorable man. I haven't gotten to his website recently, but I'm going to go back there to the Alabama Left, and I believe that they're
leftinalabama.com, but Matt is at osborneinc.com, osborneinc.com.
OsborneInc.com. Okay, I believe even in Alabama, if we had anything like an honest fourth estate in news media, the American people would be a much more dark blue state in places like Alabama, too, for the people, if they really would think things through, like a Thomas.
But, Brian, and this isn't just, Alabama Stan or Mississippi Stan. It's all over the country. There is a concerted effort to keep people from thinking things through, and it's called... it is called the for-profit media. I wasn't kidding when I was talking with Matt about the fact that no matter how liberal you might be, and that's a comparative term when you're in a place like Alabama, but no matter what your political stance, you're going to have to run ads if you're running for political office in Alabama that tout your conservative family values.
Yeah, I can't. That Griffith guy is such a turncoat. I can't stand. The sight of the guy, I always loved his, what is it, the Andy Griffith Show as a kid, I always loved it. So that's what I was going to say, I have an old tin sign here, a collector sign, The Men of Mayberry. It's got, Goober Pyle, Gomer Pyle, Opie, Ron Howard, and Andy Griffith. I repainted my garage, I haven't put that sign back up, but that's the kind of, but this Griffith, I can't stand, he's not,
can't stand a turncoat. Democrat.
Yeah, it was
when
he ran out of the first place. Though.
Remember what the ninth circle of hell is reserved for in Dante's Inferno.
Oh God, yeah.
isn't the worst circle of hell reserved for the betrayers?
I think I think the lowest. It may be.
Isn't that where Judas? Isn't that where he put Judas?
Judas, I believe, and it may be the same level where the bankers are, too, because, and when you look at the Wall Street thieves there, they betrayed everything in their so-called federal backing and trust, the $17 trillion or $14 trillion that's been pumped into their so-called private profits. This scam is going to come down horribly, but I don't know how it's going to work out, but what he was saying, that who's the young guy that's running in this Alabama there, the new Democratic...
Taz Shepard. He's the grandson of the great Senator John Sparkman.
Sparkman. Okay. It sounds like he sounds like a real Democrat, and they have had there's been so many great true Democrats from the South too. The guy that headed the Watergate hearings there was truly
Sam Ervin, North Carolina. Sure.
Yeah, he was. He had not only a charming guy, but he was. I believe he was a solid Democrat, and at the very least, in the sense of a John Murtha, those kind of. And he truly loved the country, and that's why he had to do those hearings. But we needed the hearings now after the lawless George W. Bush, and we haven't got them. That's disgusting. But that's what he always stood for: the law and civilization. Thomas More and this law center that these right wing fascists, how they steal his name. It enrages me, Bob.
No, I can understand how it would, and at the same time, I remember the Bush administration, but at the same time that you've got this bunch of right wing womb Nazis in the form of the Moore Center, look up in Pittsburgh, you've got the Thomas Merton Center, that great monk that Thomas Merton was. And they were surveilled by the Bush administration security apparatus because they were dangerous, because they were for, peace.
They were actually for the real Jesus, this Prince of Peace that, that all historians, especially people from other faiths, it seems to be more often, they can recognize him as the Prince of Peace, Joshua. That's his real name, I believe. that Nazarene leather.
Yeah, Yeshua.
No, Bob.
Yeah. Well,
I just... I just was so taken, you know, your the conversation there with Matt there. But I don't, and I, like you're saying, Alabama, you can see with this emerging, this country, I don't think they're going to get another 1994 to come this November. They're not going to get another Newt Gingrich the way they think they are. It just, and Harry Reid has got to stop being a mannequin, though, too.
Mannequin? I think my word was doormat at best. Brian, thanks a million,
okay, brother.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Brian calling from New Hampshire, and we move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Hey, this is Brad, a.k.a. Bleeding Heart out here in Texas.
Oh, hey, Brad. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, just really, really refreshing to find your show, man. It's getting lonely out here.
A little, yeah, I know, but you know what? There's some good news out of Texas today.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And I'm not being a smart aleck, and it's something I wouldn't have expected. But those Texas nurses who tried to do the right thing for the patients in their hospital about this one particular doctor who was trying to sell herbal diet supplements, you know, just like right-wing radio ads, and perform home surgery. Oh my God. The prosecutor in that county decided to indict them for basically trying to protect patient safety, and the two nurses were arrested by the sheriff of the county, who it turned out was buddy-buddy with the doctor in the case. But lo and behold, a jury got hold of it, Brad, and they told the nurse to walk away and go and sin no more.
All right on. Well,
I'm glad when I see stuff like that come out of Texas.
Yeah. Every little bit helps. I mean, especially when you see, so much else going wrong. I mean, it's, I was thinking about how far the left has to go in order to make up ground. And then I was thinking, well, you know, the right wing, they've had 30, 40 years working on this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They've been planning this coup basically for 30 or 40 years. And we're going to have to basically do the same thing.
We are, and it would have been nice if we could have gotten a little bit of an earlier start on it. But you're absolutely right. But you know, and the documentation's out there, the Powell memo, Richard Viguerie and direct mail.
Even farther than that, you can go all the way back. I'm talking about all the way back to the Reagan administration when he piled up with what's his name? Big old preacher man.
Oh, Jerry Falwell.
Jerry Falwell.
Yeah.
And the immoral majority. And
that's what I said. Actually, it goes further back than that, Brad, because the Powell memo is 1972. Richard Viguerie is 1968
and
the general demarcation of when the Republican Party decided that they were going to take over the country is the day after Barry Goldwater got his butt handed to him by Lyndon Johnson in 1964, November thereof.
Yeah. But you know what happened really? What was the final straw that really broke the camel's back, at least in my opinion, was when those the so-called true believers, when the true believers got on board with the right wing during the Reagan period, during the Falwell period.
There's no doubt that because that's when Republican started winning in the so-called Solid South.
Absolutely, but see, the thing about it is that
they did it through the churches.
A true believer, by very definition, they have been raised to believe what they are told. I mean, they're raised to believe that every word in the Bible is true and to be believed literally. And I mean, I'm talking about the fundamentalists here.
Oh yeah.
And I'm not talking about
No. You're talking about the people who believe that the Earth itself is just slightly younger than the written recipe for bread.
10,000 years old, and like you said, they go to Sunday school and they're dinosaur pet.
Yeah.
The kind of mind that creates is the kind of mind that will eventually just believe anything they want to believe.
And the operative word, Brad, is believe.
Yeah,
see, I believe that believe, let me rephrase that. I know that believe is the opposite of knowledge. Because when you say you believe something, you're saying that there is no grounding in fact for the position you're taking, that you are doing it exclusively of fact.
Right. You are believing, when you believe something, it is under no pressure from evidence of any kind. There's a difference between believing something to be true and having evidence to support your belief, from the fact that they've been taught to believe the word of the Bible literally without evidence opens the door for them to be able to believe anything without evidence, anything they're told. And so they do. And so all of a sudden we have, ghosts and vampires and angels and demons and all over.
Yeah. And all, dancing on the heads of pins. Wait, pinheads. But I guess we're being redundant, aren't we?
No, you're right the first time, on the head. Yeah.
Yeah. And you see, that's one of the things that, whether it was Vigory with his direct mailing or the Powell memo, all that stuff. The other thing, you started out the phone call, Brad, by saying, it's getting a little lonely out here. And that's, don't think for an instant that sentiment is not a constructed one. After 20 or 30 years of right-wingers bleating all over the public airwaves that, well, there ain't no liberals left in America no more. You don't want to be no liberal.
By design. I realize that. I mean, what do you expect when you have people in drive time sitting in traffic 5 days a week to and from work just getting this crap over the radio from the far right wing? I mean, it's not even Republican. This is even too far right to even be called Republican. This is just fascist crap.
Plain old fashioned dyed in the wool. Exactly.
If there's in the mail, sheets getting pressed, fascism.
Yeah. And if there's one place, and I guess this is my little personal soapbox, Brad, but if there's one place where the our side of the discussion or disagreement has absolutely and utterly failed, it is in letting right-wing radio dominate and put its garbage out. It's like that scene from Shakespeare where Hamlet sees Claudius pouring the poison in his daddy's ear. The fact of the matter is, this is poison that's been poured into the ear of the body politic of this country. And our side has just sat there with its thumb up its butt, letting it happen.
But what choice did we have, Bob? I mean, after the Fairness Doctrine was repealed, and all of a sudden, massive amounts of money, through the likes of Rupert Murdoch and
Richard Mellon Scaife and Pete Coors and all of that,
started throwing tons of cash on not just radio, but billboards and buying up.
But Brad, you say, what choice did we have? There is, I mentioned Robert Perry early in the program. Over at Consortium News, if you dig back a ways, there's one column where he very meticulously goes through not the failings, but the abandonment of media by the so-called liberals within the democratic structure.
There was that. That's correct.
And he said, he notes that there are foundations that used to support liberal media who now say, no, we've got to spend our money on homelessness issues, or we've got, because what happened is the Republicans got hold of government and started deconstructing the social safety net, which then meant that liberals of conscience had to move in there to try to pick up that slack, and lo and behold, it created a vacuum in which there was either actively or passively no money to put into media.
Yeah, well, I mean, piece by piece, FDR's programs are being whittled away one by one. And something had to be done. But just one more thing I wanted to bring up about the war. How many years has this thing been going on now in one incarnation or another since, I guess it was 2003?
Well, I mean, you know, the bombs started falling on Afghanistan in, what, October 2001?
In 2000, wait, well, okay, but then they went diverted into Iraq, and then it mutated into any form it could maintain a presence over there.
Right, with the bloodthirsty right even to this moment.
But, I mean, how many years has it been now? So it's been almost 11 years.
Well, March next month will mark mark 6 years in Iraq.
Okay.
And we're no closer to winning now than we were the day that we went in.
Oh, there will be no winning.
No.
That's not part of the plan. But my main concern has to do with the fact that I don't recall. Of course, I'm 43 years old, so I wouldn't actually recall any wars personally that lasted this long. But I don't think there were any wars that the United States has been involved in that were this protracted. In other words, you know, I mean...
No, we defeated Hitler in less time than this.
Hell yeah, and so my point is, kids now are, in just about 2 or 3 years from now, we will have teenagers. We will have kids 13, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old who have never known anything except war, their entire life from the day they were born.
I know.
And I don't think that's ever been the case.
My grandchildren are that way, Brad.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I mean, most generations have known war.
Yeah.
But they've known it for a couple of years. They go, they come back, the ones that are lucky. They come back and they manage to, the lucky ones that is, they manage to put together some kind of a life for themselves. But this is the first time that kids that were born in 2001, just infants, could very possibly be going to the same war that was still going on when they were born. That just blows my mind. And to me, it's inexcusable. That amount of waste.
Yeah.
Just food for thought.
No, it's in that, in those tea leaves are written the seeds of our doom.
Yep.
Because you can't, because remember, George Bush conducted all of that crap, Brad, off the books.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you've got, and that's why I can't take any of these tea baggers seriously. They're out there hopping up and down and bumping their knuckles and flapping their little bat wings and having hissies.
You
know, the black man's going to kill America. he's giving us debts our grandchildren's is going to have to pay. Well, you know, listen, Percy.
My kid ain't going to no pubic school.
Yeah, listen, you know, your grandbaby had that debt starting in 2001.
Yeah.
When the off-the-books wars started. When the surplus that we had, because see, and that's the other thing, Brad, when they talk about debts that our grandchildren's is going to have to pay, when they talk about that crap, somehow they can never quite take the next step down to saying, but once upon a time, we had us a surplus under, oh, hell, him. Can't talk about that. God bless America, 9/11, I'm afraid. You be afraid. Everybody be afraid. And that Negro's going to break the bank.
Hallelujah.
Glory. Somebody pass the strychnine and let's a roll on the floor. Bring me a snake. God almighty. Brad, great conversation. Yeah. I'm glad you called in. Don't be a stranger.
Oh, I'm pretty strange. But
yeah, I know. I'm outstanding in my field. I don't know. They don't know why I'm outstanding in my field. It's snowing.
I wanted to call and let you know that I am... hope great things for the program and keep up the keeping up.
Well, we sure appreciate it, and we'll keep going as long as they let the lights stay on.
Well, I'll do what I can to keep that happening.
All right, thanks, Brad. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye now. It's real. It's true. This is, if you could actually sit down and plot how we got to where we are. It would almost seem like it takes an incredible series of things that you would never dream would be able to happen in the United States of America that did. Imagine, in the Eisenhower administration, this country had its highest level of union membership. By the time you get Richard Nixon, there is a full-on war on, and the American people bought it. And by the time of the Reagan administration, they were completely sold on it, that it was bad to have good wages and benefits in this country. Working people bought into that.
I don't need no union.
And you know what? Once the company had packed up and moved off to China or Kuala Lumpur or wherever the hell ever, they didn't need no union because they didn't have no job because they supported politicians. We're going to bring right to work. You got a right to work in this state. And even here in February 2010, you've got that sad freak with a dead animal on his head, Ben Nelson from Nebraska.
Well, we can't have that lawyer on the National Labor Relations Board because he'd hurt our proud heritage of right to work in Nebraska.
The man couldn't overturn that state statute if he tried. But that doesn't really matter because Ben Nelson is bought and paid for. And he's going to be a good little political prostitute and stay bought. And we continue onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello. Excuse me, it's Haven.
Hey, Haven, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm trying to think of a handle for when I call in to. I'll get around to that later.
No, it's working for me.
Okay. there was a gentleman you had on your show a couple of days ago, I think it was.
Yeah, that would be Cy Khan.
Mentioning work your shift, I think it was. Pull your shift.
Yeah, pull your shift.
Yeah. Yeah, that was something else. I needed to hear that. I definitely needed to hear that because I have been coming to some really dim conclusions about all of this nonsense going on, and of course the latest is, you know, the issue with South Dakota is going on now, and plus the lady who called in, I guess the first caller, when she mentioned the military discussing trying to find ways of stripping citizenship from people. And that was, you know, stuff like that, stories like that really are really discouraging. You know what I mean?
Well, they are, and frightening and sickening. And the fact that, as in talking about it with Susan, the fact that this is I would expect this article, Haven, if it was being published on February the 10th, 2006, or February the 10th, 2004, because that's typical neocon, right-wing, goose-stepping, loyal, bushy crap. But it's February the 10th, 2010, Haven, and this is going on inside the Obama Pentagon. And nobody has told them to stop.
Yeah. But it's a system, and he is. And one thing I found out is that you can put really, assuming that he's a good person, you could put really honorable people in charge of the same old beast, and it won't matter because, you know, especially some of these people, of course, are Cheney stay-behinds. Peel off.
Exactly. And the fact, and look, you know, let's just deal with a little reality here, Haven. There are people inside the Democratic structure who think the same way. I'm utterly convinced, and you would be hard pressed to change that conviction, that Rahm Emanuel is a bloodthirsty killer. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably, He's the president's chief of staff. There's nobody. I mean, you know, first of all, the people that these things are being directed at are Muslims, and Rahm Emanuel wouldn't pee on a Muslim to put out a fire. Okay, it's just a fact. He's a bigot. His father is a bigot.
Well, yeah, but except that it's certain Muslims. I mean, after all, Muhammad Ali has a place of honor there. You know, honored him. I think it was last year sometime, maybe his birthday or something.
Yeah.
But he's a
different story.
He's a different kind of Muslim.
But remember this, this business of de-citizening Americans, this is not an academic an academic pursuit of people in an ivory tower just sitting around scratching their pointy little heads and thinking, I wonder if we might ever need to do this. There are human beings who are on a list that exists, and this is not paranoia, this is not the Alex Jones show. There's a guy named Anwar al-Awlaki. He was born in Las Cruces, New Mexico. He is an American citizen. He is alleged to be an al-Qaeda commander and an organizer and recruiter in Yemen. His name is on a kill list. And he's an American citizen. His name is on an Obama administration kill list. And so are several other Americans. The Obama administration is okay with assassinating American citizens without trial, without due process. This is summary execution, and there's only one way to describe the process by which those orders are delivered, and that is that deep in the bowels of the national security structure, Haven, there is some sort of court of star chamber in which these people are declared enemies of the state and available for assassination.
That's right.
And that should be chilling to any American on either side of the debate. Unfortunately, there's a fascist side of this debate that for whom it is not chilling, but rather patriotic and uplifting. And the thing that just absolutely makes my blood run cold is that I know that there is no concomitant list of potential Timothy McVeighs out there that they would be willing to kill. Even though those people, reading their little O'Reilly books and sitting there with the drool falling out of their mouths every evening, watching Glenn Beck, are ready and willing to kill and walk among us every day. The entire right wing of this country, Haven, is one big sleeper cell.
Yeah, I'm getting that.
I mean, I hope you can tell me that I'm wrong and I'm just a raving paranoid and you know, I need to calm down and go take my medicine.
I don't think you're a raving paranoid. I don't know, I don't know these people, but, you know, I did actually have an experience a couple of years ago where I was in a grocery store and there was, around the corner, there was, some guy who was ranting and raving against Bush. This was probably back in 2003 or 4. And he had a sort of a down-home country southern accent. And I kind of eased around to the end of the aisle and peeked around the corner. And it was a guy who, honestly, if I had just seen him, and if he hadn't opened his mouth, I would have just assumed he was just, this guy was about 6'4" and about 300 pounds and more, and kind of a redneck looking sort of guy. And, to my surprise, he was even back then, I think this was an isolated case, but this guy was really exercised talking to some guy in the grocery store about how Bush was the worst thing that ever happened to this country. This was back in 2003 when, you know, the liberals, us, the progressives, were really, I thought we were the only, maybe he would, maybe he is too, but That was an experience that I had. I had one experience like that. So I don't know what to say. I mean, I guess it's tough. It's tough. And that's why when I was listening to a gentleman the other day, I was really lifted up by that, because he was basically saying that, you know, don't worry about what seems to be on the way. Do what you can do, because everybody can do something. You know,
right.
We can't all go and go to march or, you know, boycott and out in the streets and that sort of thing with the signs. Some people can and should do that. Other people can do other things. And that was a big deal for me. I was just listening to him, and I was like, that's a very good point, because, you know, as I look at things, we are going to hell in a handbasket. And that was powerful.
It is, because there is a tendency, Haven, to think, you know, when you're sitting there and you're just looking at a mountain of poop, there's a tendency to think, oh my God, how am I ever going to move all of this mountain of poop?
Definitely.
But then you realize, I don't have to move the whole thing. All I got to do is move one shovel full and then move another. And if we all shovel, it gets gone a lot quicker. And frankly, I don't know how you look at this country and all of its myriad manifest problems, most of which have been brought on by the predatory policies, practices, and predilections of the right wing. I don't know how you look at that and not just to say, hey, somebody get me a shovel. And they can lead follower, get out of the way. And, you know, I wish we were seeing a lot more of that out of the Democratic Congress. Alan Grayson is the number one fundraising member of Congress right now for the last Federal Election Commission reporting quarter. Our buddy Juanita in Florida alerted me to this. How many news stories are there about that out there? Have you seen one, Haven? I haven't. The only way I found out about it,
I haven't,
was reading Alan Grayson talking about it himself on the Huffington Post. And you know what? He had I think he had 14 pages of responses from people going, go, Alan, go. I wish you were my congressman. And yet the Democratic so-called majority in the House and Senate looks around and says, well, we don't want to be like liberal nor nothing. And
How long has he been in Congress?
He's a freshman.
Okay.
You know, he was elected in 2008.
Okay. So, he's off to a good start, and evidently they seem to let him do his thing and not, you know, pull him to the side and say, what the hell are you doing? At least not yet.
Yeah, exactly. But, PsyCon, and if you, that phrase, pull your shift, comes from his book.
Okay.
And the name of the book is Creative Community Organizing. And the whole thing's
That's right.
Yeah, the whole thing's just magnificent if you want to get your hands on a copy.
Okay. Right.
And his music, we played a bunch of his music that night, too, and
right,
it's equally
right.
stunning.
Yeah. It's something else. This was a thing that happened back in 2008. The place that I worked at in 2008, my coworkers, we used to talk a lot of politics and that sort of thing. And there was a girl there who was about probably like 24, 25 or so. And she was completely non-political, but she knew enough that her family is rabid Republican. They are the far end. And, of course, we were talking about Sarah Palin and that sort of thing, and we would kind of involve her in the conversations. And she was, you know, she's her hobbies were the beach and Jack Daniels and that sort of thing. That was her thing. And we kind of just pulled her in to the conversation. She wasn't registered to vote, and when we would talk to her, you know, we would talk with her, it was like, you know, the farthest thing from her mind was kind of like, well, how do I am a citizen. How do I not, what do you mean I have to register to vote? I'm a citizen, right? How do I not vote? How do I, what do you mean I have to register to vote? And that sort of thing. She had absolutely no political awareness at all. I mean, she did, but it was that Republican, that, as you said, Republican, I believe.
Yes, I am guilty of that.
Right, yeah. And that was her awareness that she was like, you know, her grandmother was a huge John McCain and Sarah Palin fan. They was that level. And we did convince her to make sure that she was registered. And for some reason, the parent turned out that she was registered. And she did vote in 2008. Now, on 2008, she voted for president, and she wrote in Donald Duck. And we were gigantically pissed at her for that, because and she went to the trouble of taking a picture of her vote with the cell phone, and she showed that to us. And it was just like, oh my God. Everything that we had, you know, all of the just casual conversations that we thought was kind of
thought you were getting somewhere and then
kind of bounced off. But you know, but after a while I kind of thought about it and I was like, you know, the easiest thing in the world for her to do would have been to go in there and just vote Republican and leave. And I feel like she kind of split the difference. I think there was like a little crack of dawn in there that she basically split the difference, knowing, you know what I'm saying, that she couldn't vote Democrat. But at the same time, kind of, because we discussed all kinds of crap, all kinds of stuff like taxes and that sort of thing. She was, for some reason, she could talk fairly fluently about taxes and how bad they are. And so I talked about taxes and how good they are. So that was a conversation that we were able to
have. And what, you know, and what do you want your country to be like? You know, taxation is evil thing, the chickens are finally coming home to roost, Haven. I don't know if you've been following the story out of Colorado Springs. But that Colorado Springs, Colorado, has been a haven. Has been an absolute. It's been a mecca, if you will, for the anti-tax bunch. Simply because there's so, oddly enough, because there's so many people on the government teat in Colorado Springs. You know, you've got the Air Force Academy there. You've got lots of military installations there. And you've got the fundamentalist religion industry there. That's the home of Focus on the Family. And so
exempt industry.
And so taxes are practically illegal in Colorado Springs. Well, guess what? They're laying off cops. They're laying off firefighters. They're going to mow the grass once a week or once every 2 weeks in the public spaces. They've taken up the garbage cans in the public parks because they can't afford to maintain any of that anymore because, well, remember, no new taxes.
They're looking a lot like Iceland, I guess.
And you know, frankly, it's been frequently argued on this program, and I agree with it, that the logical end of these anarcho-Randian arguments from people like Grover Norquist and the like is that, you know, what they ultimately want is Somalia. What they ultimately want is Haiti. And guess what? They've got the very front ends of the breakdowns that constitute the beginnings of that, and it's happening right in one of God's favorite cities, Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Yeah.
But where? Wow. How many stories have you seen about that on the for-profit media, Haven?
I haven't seen any, actually.
They're talking about it. I know David Sirota was talking about it out on AM 760 in Denver. I've mentioned him several times lately, simply because I want him to succeed. I want more liberal radio, not less of it. And lo and behold, he mentioned it, and the Denver Post mentioned it, and some right-wing thug from Colorado Springs. You're being unfair talking, and all you can't talk about us that way. Well, you know, it was just facts. Well, that's the liberal media. And there you go.
Yeah.
Well, Haven, this has been a wonderful conversation. I really appreciate it and enjoyed it. And don't be a stranger.
All righty.
All right. Take care.
Yep.
Bye now. And we'll do one more phone call and then take a little break because we've got the Green News Report tonight, this being Thursday, and I hate to miss that. Okay, we don't have one more phone call. Somebody gave up. So we will take our little break. Green News Report is on the way. Brad Friedman, Desi Doyen. Matt Osborne sent along a tune, seeing how we've been talking about things like, Susan brought up the issue. Can't play it. It won't play. Darn it. I have to download it first. Ick. But at any rate, a reminder for you. I mentioned this earlier in the week, and I want to confirm it to you. We are proud to have a brand new program debuting this weekend on the Horn. I am all excited about it. You know, for a long time, there's been an element of the Horn that it was sort of a, at least the people behind the microphone aspect, it was kind of a boys' club. And that day is over. Action Point with Cynthia Black will debut Saturday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on the Horn. And 3 hours, and I think you are going to be just tickled. I'm looking forward to it because I've got a pretty good idea, having talked to both Cynthia and her intrepid producer, Chris, what's gone into this. I think you're going to be blown away. So it will debut at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right after the Rick Smith Show from Pennsylvania. And shoot me an email. Let me know what you think. I'm just as tickled as I can be to add another program to the Horn rotation. And expand the amount of content that we provide in this ongoing effort to provide some sort of an antidote to the for-profit media structure. Action Point with Cynthia Black, Saturday night, and it'll rotate all through the weekend. Anytime you check in on the rerun stream, you're likely to hear that or one of my reruns or one of Rick Smith's reruns, that kind of thing. So make sure you tune in. Action Point with Cynthia Black. All right, one last story before we run off to the break, just because I've got a really good bumper for it. It just jumped. It was one of those things that was just made for the situation, the song, the story, just made for each other. And that particular story would be the manifested fears on, of course, Fox News. In an interview with Greta Van Susteren, attractive blonde lady, nowhere to be seen. Greta Van Susteren sat down for an interview, softballs only, please, with the repig-licking minority leader, namely John Boehner. Man, is he orange. This, I don't know. That's just crazy. I don't know how much of that's orange makeup and how much of that's tanning bed orange, but man, is he orange. But he's all skeert. He's all skeert. because he's afraid that Barack Obama, you know him, that Kenyan, the one without the long-form birth certificate, you know, one of them people, that this health care summit that's going to be on the TV box, John Boehner's scared that it's a trap.
Use the same thing. So they did all their testing and decided they would call it a jobs bill.
So it's a name change.
It's a name change, that's okay. All it is.
All right, and a small, and presumably a smaller amount.
At this point, yes.
All right, now back to the health care bill. February 25th, do you intend to go to this bipartisan meeting that the president's calling and is going to have televised at the White House?
Well, listen, I want to have a bipartisan conversation with the president about how to fix our health care system. But Eric Cantor and I sent a letter to Rahm Emanuel posing a series of questions about, really, what is this? You know, the White House let us know about an hour before the American people saw this in his interview on Sunday afternoon.
So it's a stunt?
Well, I don't know. That's what we're trying to get to the bottom of.
What would it take for you to go to that February 25th?
I want to have this bipartisan conversation, but I want it to be productive, and I want it to be real. I don't want to walk into some trap. I don't want to walk into some political event. I want to walk in and have a real conversation about what we can do to make this our current system work better.
Okay, so do you? If the president says, we're starting with this bill, I'm the president, I get to make those decisions, it's my meeting, but we're starting with the bill, we're not going to scrap it, are you going to go?
Well, we'll see. We'd like to go. We'd like to have this conversation. But I want to do everything I can to make it as productive as possible.
What do you make of the fact that it's televised? American people are probably delighted that we're getting this televised.
I think that's fine. But, you know, is this a political event or is this going to be a real conversation?
Well, except that we've been hammering them about the transparency. The president said, you know, he's going to put everything on C-SPAN. So we can't criticize him now for when he finally does put it on C-SPAN.
Fine, but I want to make sure that we're going to
pay attention to that. We. She's on the same, you know, she works, Greta Van Susteren works for Fox, and she's saying, we've been hammering them. Objective journalism. Oh, sorry, you've been taken out and killed, objective journalism. She and John Boehner are on the same team. And John Boehner's just a little nervous. Because that Obama is inscrutable. I don't want to get ambushed in the jungle, because that's frightening and scary when a Kenyan ambushes you in the jungle with his poison-tipped Karari arrows, and the poison seeps through your system and all the orange drains out of your head. Poor John Boehner. Scared of those TV cameras. You'll understand the bumper. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out. Because I love you too much, baby.
Suspicious.
Suspicious.
And we can't. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, February 11, 2010.
ExxonMobil still funding climate deniers. Haiti still devastated. Have a greener Valentine's Day, plus an inconvenient snowstorm.
It's breaking Al Gore's heart because the snow is also burying his global warming theory. The weather is so rotten right now, and people are going, how can there be global warming?
It's the most severe winter storm in years, which would seem to contradict Al Gore's hysterical global warming theories.
Folks, that is simple observational research. Whatever just happened is the only thing that is happening.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Maybe Al Gore can put that in his pipe and eat it!
This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is brought to you by Velvet Revolution's StopTheChamber.com campaign. Concerned about the Supreme Court's recent ruling allowing unlimited corporate cash in American elections, so is VR. Fight back at StopTheChamber.com and help citizens take on the unapologetic corporatists. It's your democracy. Use it or lose it. Please visit StopTheChamber.com today. Okay, Dez, Snowpocalypse, Snowmageddon, Snowtorious B.I.G.
Snowtorious. No, no.
What's going on? So much for global warming, I guess.
Well, of course.
That's what I heard in the media. So, what?
Well, no? We'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
First off, on a very serious note, the Haitian government this week revised the death toll from the devastating earthquake that happened just 1 month ago. Now the death toll stands at 230,000 with an estimated 300,000 injured. Although the TV cameras have left, aid workers and public health experts say the second wave of the disaster is well underway with the spread of disease and critical shortages of medical supplies. You can still lend a hand to groups like Doctors Without Borders and many smaller charities that are working to rebuild Haiti sustainably. We have the links at our website, greennews.bradblog.com.
And things are getting even worse down there as the rains are now coming in, devastating folks who don't have shelter. It's not good.
Last year, when oil giant ExxonMobil was revealed to have been directly funding climate denier groups, the corporation changed course. Exxon said it no longer disputed the science underlying climate change and would stop funding denier groups.
Well, that took care of that.
Oh, you'll never guess what happened
really
next.
Was.
An investigation by the UK's Independent has found Exxon is still indirectly funding the climate change denial industry by funding nonprofit organizations and think tanks that then turn around and directly fund denier conferences, media outlets, positions, papers and advertising.
Well, knock me over with a feather.
Exxon confirmed to the New York Times that they do fund these nonprofit organizations. One is called Atlas Economic Research that funds 30 different climate skeptic organizations. And their efforts are paying off. Recent public opinion polls show public confidence in the science has dropped over the last year. The links go deep. You can see for yourself at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Oh, and did we mention that in 2009, the oil and gas industry broke records on the amount of money they spent lobbying Congress?
So money lobbying Congress, money to these AstroTurf groups.
Good thing the Supreme Court decided that corporations can put as much money as they want into campaigns now just to seal the deal.
And on a much, much lighter note, Valentine's Day is this Sunday. A lot of waste gets generated, so we'd like to recommend some alternatives. Look for organic fair trade chocolates. Rather than cut flowers that'll just go into the trash, give living plants. Give a handmade Valentine that won't get thrown away, or better yet, send an e-card or give online digital music. You don't even have to go retail to celebrate your sweetie. Rather than giving more stuff, give experiences and share your time. We've got some great ideas for you at our website.
How about if you just say Happy Valentine's Day on the air?
There's an idea.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you. Finally, the snowpocalypse continues to hammer the nation's capital as the second blizzard in a week caused major disruptions and shut down the federal government. It's the third record-breaking storm to hit the region this winter. The first two storms already rank in the top 10 heaviest D.C. storms. Of course, this delights anti-science right-wingers.
Yeah, it's hysterical, actually. Fox News, you heard us in the opening, Fox News was going crazy. They actually buried a copy of Al Gore's book out in the snow outside Neil Cavuto's studio, and they were shooting it all throughout the show.
Poor Al Gore. Is he seeing his book collecting snow outside Fox? It's unbelievable. That's Al Gore's book, Inconvenient Truth, and Inconvenient Truth getting piled on by more and more snowfall. I'm not sure what chapter Mr. Gore dealt with. Record snowfalls across the whole eastern seaboard.
Well, let me help you out, Fox News. From Al Gore's book, page 106, warmer water increases the moisture content of storms and warmer air holds more moisture. When storm conditions trigger a downpour, more of it falls in the form of big, one-time rainfalls and snowfalls. That was Al Gore in the book that's buried out there in the snow.
Yeah, the Fox News Brain Trust appears to be having a brain freeze.
Wouldn't be the first time.
The Global Change Research Program, headed by the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, they directly predicted stronger winter storms for the Northeast.
There is a lack of snow up in Canada for the Winter Olympics opening up this weekend. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Follow us on Twitter. Download us on iTunes. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Inconvenient Green News Report.
Notorious. Notorious.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay, well, it's not the entire hour, three. We got about a half hour of good conversation left in us for this evening's program. And by the way, don't think I didn't notice. You guys are still commenting on the BuzzFlash article, and that's really great. Who knows? At some point, we may hit 100 comments. Man, that's going to blow me away when we do. Sneaky is the latest comment over there. And Sneaky said, 1, 2, 3 hours. We want 4. I pay attention to these things, and you know what? That time may come sooner rather than later. It's just all a matter of what we can make work out within the circumstances with which we have to work. But yeah, we may. And by the way, I hope you are forgiving of my occasional forays back into DJing. I can't help it. I watched the John Boehner, the interview with Greta Van Scientologist, and the business about being, and I don't know, you know, maybe it's like this even if you never did work in radio, because I think the concept of the MP3 player came from the fact that we've all got all these songs stuck in our heads. And we can call them up when, but, you know, you want them in your, you know what I mean. So when I heard, when I saw John Boehner say that he didn't want to get, set up, walk into a setup in this healthcare summit with Barack Obama on February the 25th, it was almost instantaneous. Almost instantly, I heard Elvis's voice inside my head singing, "Caught in a Trap." And I knew it just, I had to make it happen somewhere in the show. Because if it didn't, it would be some corner that we didn't turn. And you never know when that opportunity is going to come along again. So please forgive me. But then again, it also conjures these god-awful images of John Boehner with his big old orange head stuffed inside, like, you know, like sausage into a casing, stuffed inside that white Elvis jumpsuit somewhere, somewhere in a seedy hotel in Euclid, Ohio, looking at a woman that he's just paid 5 small to, saying, "Come on, baby, throw me your panties. I'll have nightmares. I tell you, I will have nightmares." So that's where all of that came. Please forgive me. A couple of emails rolled in during the last few minutes that I hadn't gotten to, and I want to make sure that I did. Kate, off in the hills of East Tennessee, reminding us all the conversation that I had with Haven, in which we discussed the ongoing state of hostilities in which the United States finds itself almost perpetually embroiled now. Kate just wrote in very briefly to say, "Might I remind y'all that there is no war, not declared, not constitutional, illegal occupation, if you please." And I get that. That's what it is. It's all illegal occupation. It is an illegal occupation of Afghanistan. It is an illegal occupation of Iraq. And once again, these teabaggers who want to go back to the fundamental principles of our Constitution and the Christians who have founded it miss that whole part about how only Congress shall have the power to declare war and raise armies. Just right by them. Miss that one. Oh! Oh, he wasn't ready for the fastball, Phil. They're not ready for slow pitch softball, the teabaggers aren't. These are illegal occupations because unless I missed the memo, Congress never declared war on Afghanistan or Iraq or Yemen no, not at all. So I get that. And with regard to the Colorado Springs story that I alluded to, Ron in Raleigh adds, "My brother worked for the water treatment department for 28 years in Colorado Springs. He's retiring 2 years early because of the crap you just spoke of." Ron adds, "Taxes are the price you pay for a civilized society." You know, Brad and Desi did a lovely job of pointing up the ridiculousness of the right wing out there building igloos for Al Gore and that crazy crap.
but they did all those right wingers happen to notice that there were snow plows going up and down the streets of D.C. that there was salt on the roads to try to melt some of the snow and the ice? Did they notice that? And where did they think that came from? Well, that was salt that was bought by the government that they and their pals, to quote Grover Norquist, want to weaken to the point that it can be drowned in a bathtub. You know, you drown the government in the bathtub, your roads don't get salted there, Sparky. But I guess that's okay by them. And I want to run backwards a minute, too, and go back to the story that both Susan and Haven mentioned. I want to go back to this business of the exploration of de-citizenship proceedings for U.S. citizens who are determined to be terrorists. I want to make sure that we have this absolutely hammered down so that there's nothing left to blow loose. Glenn Greenwald over at Salon, who does such magnificent work, wrote the following. Just think about this for a minute. Barack Obama, like George Bush before him, has claimed the authority to order American citizens murdered based solely on the unverified, uncharged, unchecked claim that they are associated with terrorism and pose, quote, a continuing and imminent threat to U.S. persons or interests, unquote. Hey, look, they're using that word person again, just like the word person appears in the Constitution where it says, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Person. This business of casual murder drills down through layers of political philosophy that just make your head hurt to contemplate. Because the Constitution does say that. And I think it was Chris Hayes who appeared on Morning Joe and tried to explain to that nimble that when the Constitution says persons, it doesn't really mean citizens. And see, that's another moment of hypocrisy for the rats on the Supreme Court. Well, clearly the Constitution only applies to citizens of the United States. No, dumbass, it says persons, unless you are willing to allege and argue that no one outside the territorial confines or the legal confines of citizenship inside the United States, unless you're willing to argue that only citizens of the United States are that they are the only persons on the planet, then persons means what the plain language of the Constitution says it means. Whoopsie, there's some originalism for you. A rose is a rose is a rose, and a person is a person is a person. Don't know why these things are so hard to get the head around for a wingnut. But to go back to Glenn Greenwald, of these persons, they are entitled to no charges, no trial, no ability to contest the accusations. Amazingly, the Bush administration's policy of merely imprisoning foreign nationals, along with a couple of American citizens, without charges, based solely on the president's claim that they were terrorists, produced intense controversy for years. That, one will recall, was a grave assault on the Constitution. Shouldn't Obama's policy of ordering American citizens assassinated without any due process or checks of any kind, not imprisoned, but killed, produce at least as much controversy? this isn't one of those situations where armies line up across 100 yards away from each other across an open field and shoot each other with muskets, and one side's wearing bright red uniforms and the other side's wearing bright blue uniforms. This is the 21st century, and uniforms have become quite passé. Oh, wait, what would John Yoo call it, or Jason Bybee? Quaint. So because we can't be certain, we'll just err on the side of caution and blow their stinking brains out. And again, may I direct your attention to the fact that it's not just Anwar al-Awlaki. There is a list of American persons, and that list says at the head of it, shoot on sight. Wanted, dead. Not the or alive part, because if you capture them and bring them home, well, that's just too troublesome. Because then you start getting back into that Constitution thingy. And the President of the United States is a constitutional scholar, we are told. I had a cup of coffee and a couple of constitutional law classes once upon a time when dinosaurs roamed the earth. And I don't recall anything, and I even made a good grade in the class. I don't recall anything in there that says the president has the power to order summary executions. The last I checked, when people are doing that, you wind up with some jug-eared, pig-eyed little idiot standing in front of a podium talking about someone who kills his own people, and that therefore we don't want to wait for the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud. And the next thing you know, you're mired up to your eyeballs in illegal occupation. The Iroccupation, if you will. Historically, over the relatively short span of time in which the United States has been a participant on the world stage, we have taken a dim view of countries that kill its own citizens without any sort of meaningful legal process. We fought wars over that. Real ones, declared ones. But now, in 2010, we live in an America in which you and I, because see, that can be put on one of those goddamn lists. Because, see, the whole underpinning of all of this BS is trust us, we're the government. Again, where's the freaking Tea Party? Where are the teabaggers on this one? Why isn't Glenn Beck crying on air over this? Wait a minute. He likes it when people suffer needless death. What was he doing today? Oh, yeah, here we go. I think.
And then how about this one? A statement linking the rising temperatures to increased economic losses from the natural catastrophes contradicts the findings of the research the report cites. The IPCC says that one, okay, that one has a lot of important qualifiers in it that you should read. Oh, okay. There's not enough knives. If the IPCC had been done by Japanese scientists, there's not enough knives on planet Earth for Harry Caray that should have occurred. I mean, these guys have so dishonored themselves, so dishonored scientists.
Glenn Beck calls for the suicide of all scientists!
No, just the climate scientists. Where's Glenn Beck? I mean, this ought to be easy. The Obama administration has a list of people that are American citizens, that it's okay to kill without arresting, without charging.
Well, they're terrorists.
How many of those terrorists are right-wing terrorists on that list? Oh, wait a minute. It can only be a terrorist if the person is running around with brown people or people with Muslim or Arabic sounding or Pashtun sounding names. Oh, and they're working on this, too, because they done found him a law. 8 U.S.C. section 1481. The federal statute that says a citizen loses his citizenship by, quote, serving in the armed forces of a foreign state if such armed forces are engaged in hostilities against the United States. But he only loses it if he does so with the intention of relinquishing his U.S. citizenship. Oopsie. See, there's that serving in the armed forces of a foreign state. That's the problem. There's no foreign state here. We're at war. We are. Kate, you're causing trouble here. It's war. I'm playing with you. We are at war in Afghanistan, and yet at the same time, we paint ourselves into corners and tie ourselves into knots trying to say, well, we're not at war with Afghanistan. We're just at war in Afghanistan. Jesus. We're not at war with Iraq, but we're at war in Iraq. I think that's the sort of fine distinction that can only be appreciated by someone who also isn't in Afghanistan or in Iraq. But there's nobody running around out there with a Yemeni uniform on or an Afghan military uniform on or an Iraqi uniform on with American citizenship that I know of. So that statute doesn't work. And the whole fact that this is undergirded by the idea, well, yeah, trust us, we're going to get this right. I mean, you know, we got the CIA and the NSA and the NSC and the NBA and the NFL and they've got all this here information. And what happens when they screw up? Ah, well, you know, we'll pay them a couple of $100,000 but there ain't no do-over. You don't get a second chance to get it right. All you've got is a corpse. This is a slippery slope of empire that leads to fascism, pure and simple. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. In essence, the Obama administration is saying that these individuals, these human beings, that they have assigned for execution, summary execution, are no longer persons. Citibank? Oh, by God, that's a person. Massey Energy? Person. Anwar al-Awlaki? Not a person. This is chilling business. Chilling business. So we go back to the phones. I hope you guys have been patient with me. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, Gary?
Hey, what's going on? You're on the show. Just listening.
Cool. What's up?
Hey, nothing much. I've been listening to the show the last couple of days. You know, and it kind of reminded me of something that, you know, I've been kind of, I don't want to say preaching, but been saying. And I was really thinking about it. You remember the Million Man March happened in 96?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. You know that march, and regardless of what they tell you, there's a million people there. The one thing I remember early on, back in the early 90s, I used to listen to this show called Night Talk, which was the host, Bob Law. And he hosted that show, and that was like in the early 90s. And there was a lot of frustration in the black community about a lot of stuff that was going on. Even during the Clinton administration, you know. All the, you know, gang violence that came out of the CIA once, you know, when the CIA was selling in Nicaragua back, you know, with Reagan and those guys.
All that dirty business.
Drugs through the black community, they called it gang violence. People were complaining about it, calling this a show. I remember Bob Law one night just said, you know, because we've been talking about this for like 2 or 3 years, everybody's complaining, said, we're going to have to start talking about solutions. And regardless of what people tell you, Farrakhan, Nation of Islam, had nothing to do with that movement. They came in that later. And trust me, I know because I was involved in from the beginning.
Okay.
And what happened was you had all these radio shows across the nation with Tavis Smiley had a show out in Oakland and other people. Like I said, they just started talking about we need to have this march for the brothers to come together and have this atonement. Because Jim Brown and some other people had been working in Chicago with some of the gang violence, you know, people and getting them to Crips and some of the Bloods together, people in prison, stuff like that. So they, you know, it took about 4 years, but it was pretty much a spontaneous thing. And it was powerful. I mean, you know, you saw people who just came out of nowhere, and I was there. You saw these Crips and Bloods who got up and they were shaking hands. Guys who had beef with each other and were crying. And my point being is this, is that at some point, we can analyze everything to death that the government is doing, but it's going to take more than an election to make this change. You know, I've been wondering, why hasn't there been a healthcare march on Washington? You know, why aren't, like, you know...
Well, you're closer to there than I am, and I mean, there have been. I've seen busloads of people getting off of buses in D.C., you know, demanding things like H.R. 676, Medicare for All.
I've been to some of those, but I'm saying, like, I'm talking about the one that's massive, that massive march. Something like a civil rights thing. Because I'm going to tell you, I was at one of the marches, one of the things down they had at the DNC. And I remember I was out there and I was talking to some of the people in the DNC. And this is what's the problem with them. It's like, you know, I was talking to some of the people. I said, you know, we really want to get some attention here. But there were some cameras by. I said, we need to, when the president mowed the cable or anybody come by, we need to just lay down in the street. You know, and people looking at me like I'm crazy. See, my parents were in the civil rights movement, you know. I had, my uncles and stuff, and people got shot at, they got beat over the head. But they did what they had to do. And the problem with a lot of the, you know, DNC people, DLC people, who I don't too much care for, even though I've dealt with them, is that, I'm telling you about, they're not willing to go that extra mile. They're too soft, and they're not willing to say, hey. And it's hard to get a collective strong base of people to grow it if you're not ready to go all the way. I mean, we got to be more vocal and willing to take more risk. I mean, you know, that healthcare thing that, you know, I mentioned, you know, I came out to that because, you know, I actually spoke at that thing later on and after I spoke, and, you know, some people clapped. Some people came over to me, a couple people said, well, look, we like what you said, but they said, look, they said, these people here are not interested really in the public option. They said, they're talking all this and that. My point being is that we're not going the extra mile that we need to go. That just complaining or fussing about it is not going to get anything solved. At some point, you know, and look, and I'm blaming myself for it. So I'm saying, hey, have I done enough? Have I been at every meeting? Have I been pushing people? But the people here in the D.C. area, you know, I'm here, I can tell you, the DNC people, DLC people, these people are milk toast. It's just like you were saying the other night about, like, you know, being a Southern. You know how you got to deal with a Southern. Barack Obama and I deal with a Southern. Okay, I'm from down south. I went to school in North Carolina. Okay, I know what you're talking about. We have to have an equal response. We can't be the graceful messengers anymore.
I think you're right. And if you want an answer to the question that you initially posed, Gary, I would submit to you that it has a lot to do with the fact, a lot to do with how we look at the healthcare issue from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that. You know, you've referenced the Million Man March, and I know what was behind it. I never had a problem with it. I don't think it's any of my business to have a problem or not have a problem with a bunch of people trying to get together and, you know, sort their shit out. And, you know, God knows the whole country needs to do that. This is a country in need. And, you know, that was an intervention of sorts.
Yeah, it was.
And this whole country is in need of an intervention. But the fact of the matter is, health care, we have not gotten to a point, by any stretch of the imagination, we are in fact too focused, if you'll work with me here for a minute, we are too focused on health care qua health care. We have not viewed health care, Gary, as a civil right.
There you go. That's what I was saying.
We have not addressed health care as an issue of human rights.
There you go.
You know,
that's
I mean,
question.
I don't.
That's it.
I don't think, and you know, I'm sure you've heard me say a million times on this program that environmentalism is human rights, marriage equity is human rights, labor is human rights. It's all human rights because this isn't, these aren't, you know, a woman's right to have control over her own body is a human right. But we don't tend to view it as such. We pigeonhole ourselves. Well, you know, I'm going to be an environmentalist. Well, that's great for you. I'm going to be a labor organizer. Oh, nice. Well, I'm going to work for a woman's right to choose. Work for human rights. I'm not yelling at you. Work for human rights. And frankly, there is not a soul in any one of these movements whose movement is worth a tinker's damn if everybody dies for want of health care. You know, there are 45,000 Americans, and some of them are in the, and I'm sure that some of them are in the marriage equity cause. Some of them are environmentalists. Some of them are labor organizers. Some of them are, who knows? But there is no segment of this society that is not touched by those 45,000 Americans that will die between this time tonight and this time a year from now.
Washington has no heart. That's the nature. That, I mean, basically, in the abstract way, I think that's what you're saying. That's what I know, because they get caught up in the bureaucracy and stuff. They get caught up in the technical of trying to hash it out. And, hey, you know, maybe in all things, maybe that's not their situation to be in. Maybe they are just here. But it's up to us. We are the heart. I mean, the civil rights movement, you know, Martin Luther King and all these people, you know, that started even before him. I mean, it was just a collection, you know, students and everybody else, and then Martin Luther came along at the right time, you know, and like any movement, he gets caught up in it, he becomes the spokesperson or somebody the FBI got to focus on to, you know, push, to identify them so they can kill the movement when they want to. But the thing is what you said earlier, and that's what I was going exactly, you know, head to, is that we have not looked at this as a moral right.
You know,
if we were looking at it that way, when you go to God and say, you know, it's a right, you know, and you go on that, you can get somebody motivated. But when you start talking about health care, something like, well, you know, this person about this plan, they drown out. But if you had gotten up there, and this is where I think Obama may have failed or may have not have failed, because I do think that there's a sense that Obama has that sense that he could do that. But then there's the other side of, I know there's a very powerful interest that we have to be, you know, somewhat realistic that, you know, you can only save so much, and then those little dark shadows start popping up in certain places. So, but they can never, never stop the collective consciousness of a people. That's no tank, no bullet, nothing ever stopped it. And that's what I'm saying. That we, at some point, you know, like I said, I was thinking about the million mark.
But we have decollectivized that consciousness is what I guess I'm saying, Gary.
Well, I was thinking about what you said the other night about we being on the fringe. You know, and I'm saying I was saying on the fringe. You said, no, we're not the fringe. Well, I'm saying if we're not on the fringe, then how do we collectively bring these elements together? And I'm just saying that during the 90s, they used radio. They used those black talk show, you know,
yeah, yeah,
to help push that message. And I'm wondering, just could our progressive, the few that we do have, because trust me, look, those blacks, whatever you got in progressive radio, the blacks radio stations were less, okay? You know that. So, but they still made it amazing because they came from a certain moral issue that was disturbing a lot of people. And I think there is enough angst about health care, which I think there's just enough general angst that we as a group of people are not morally right. And we look at the government, we're saying, you know, the government's not right, but, you know.
Well, there, you know, there's another aspect.
Too, we're not totally right either. I mean, there's a lot of stuff we did, you know, to help for this economic collapse, you know. It ain't like, you know, it's just, you know, it just wasn't just Bush who caused all this. I mean, you got banks, you got a lot of, you know.
Right.
You know, there's
exactly.
A lot of people involved.
And we kind of let ourselves get snookered a little bit, too, because we all sat around, you know, for heavens to Betsy, a year waiting for the Congress to get health care done. And so we let the – I don't know about you, but I don't want to put a million people in Washington, D.C. right now because it's brutally cold. And I've been in Washington, D.C. when it's brutally cold, and I don't like it. And that's just
– Remember the Orange Revolution?
Sure.
Years ago?
Absolutely.
They were in the cold, man.
Yeah, they were. And they know how to cope with it and how to deal with it. The Orange Revolution, but those were all people who were used to that kind of weather. You bring some activists up from South Florida into that. Oh, I'll take a windbreaker with me. No. You know, you bring somebody from South Texas into that, they're not going to be ready for it. And we let ourselves get snookered. We had a chance to make our voices heard, and this could have been done in reasonably decent weather. Now, you know, this healthcare summit's going to take place on February the 25th, and, you know, even March is not the best of times to be in D.C. But now that's what we have to look at. If you're going to pull something like that together, it's probably got to happen in early March.
Yeah, well,
and then the question becomes one of going to environmental organizations and labor organizations. You know, labor has done a great job motivating people who already have health care to militate for health care for everybody. Labor, you know, labor is the mother of militancy, the mother of advocacy, the mother of radicalism in this country.
Yep, exactly.
And labor has carried more than its fair share in the health care fight.
It had a lot to do with the civil rights movement.
Sure. You know, look at Cy Conn. You know, Cy Conn comes out of a labor background, and it was that labor background that enabled him to go and organize, organize for employment rights for persons of color in Arkansas at a department store. Yeah, so absolutely, labor's done its job on this, and we need to get the rest of the fractured, fragmented culture of ours together and put a million people in Washington, D.C. But here's the hitch. Not for a day. At least two. Three, if possible. You know, like in we're here and we ain't leaving. We're not going away. And you'd best damn well do something, because that's the other part of the Orange Revolution that you mentioned a minute ago and the stuff that happened in Romania. You know, they surrounded Ceausescu's palace or whatever and said, that's fine. You sit there. We'll sit here. But we're not leaving. And that's the other piece of the puzzle.
And then we have to be there. We have to just be, you know, like you said, we just can't just walk away and say, okay, you know, because the media won't stay. But like you said, if you don't leave, and if that's the premise of going into it, and you know, I've been, you know, talking with some people about this, you know, idea and stuff, you know, in terms of, like, trying to put together something like, you know, a million-man march on Washington toward healthcare. I mean, Joe Madison had been kind of talking about it on his show, but I think it needs to even be broader than just that. I mean, maybe there's some other kind of thing we can coalesce around, but I'll tell you, the night of New Orleans, the night that I was sitting here, you know, during Katrina, I was at home and I couldn't go to sleep. I was watching that thing. You know, I couldn't even, I had the same problem when doing Iraq War, when the Iraq War first started. I couldn't sleep that night. I was just so upset. But the night of Katrina, I was sitting there and I was watching the government. I said, you know what? And this goes into what you're just talking about. And I was sitting there watching, I heard a report where the woman said, you know what? We just saw a bunch of soldiers jump off a thing with guns, and we're asking them, what the hell you got guns for? We want water. And I got so mad about it. I was at the point where I was just going to start walking, because I can walk almost straight to the White House from where I live. It's a long walk, but I walk straight down, you know, this street, and it'll go straight into the Congress, Capitol Hill. And I was going to say, you know what? I was at the point where I was just about to just start walking. And any person I could see that lived in the black neighborhood, I was going to say, come on and jump. Because I know a lot of African Americans were mad about that, people calling me. And I'm telling you that, you know, I was at that point. And I know there's still a lot of people feel that way about, in general, about what's going on in this country. And again, it's going to take more than an election, because, you know, I was listening to you guys talk about the banks yesterday and stuff. And, you know, and all due respect to that, and we got to get real here. Them bankers don't give a shit about Barack Obama. Come on. They're not going to deal with him just because he gives a little speech. He can say whatever he wants to say. These guys are ingrained. They're going to do what they want to do when they want to do it. The only way they're going to get shut down is unless we shut them down. That's the bottom line. You know, that's just for how I feel about it. They can do some little changes here and this and this and that. Banks don't care. They're going to keep doing it, man. They're going to just, Barack Obama, you know what, 4 years, eight? They don't care. After that,
yeah, they are immortal corporations, Gary. They ain't going to die. Well, we're fresh out of time, but thanks very much for bringing this up, because I think it's...
I'll catch you on another night.
I think it's something we can explore further. I wish we had a greater reach in order to create, you know, the weight of impact to sort of start pulling this stuff together. And, you know, there's...
Well, I'm telling people about the show, you know.
Yeah, well, thanks. I appreciate it. You know, it's we've experienced some real growth in the last few weeks, and it is magnificent to see. Gary, have yourself a great evening.
Yeah, you too.
All right, later. Bye now. That's our buddy Gary calling from the D.C. area. And that's the end of the show. Sorry for the blinking lights that I'm leaving blinking. But, hey, it's time for Malloy. Get on over there. Thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold, and Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to our moderators in the chat room, Sue, ELO, and Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Susan had a great one tonight, bringing up the assassination story and the horror out on the plains. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to our correspondent, Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com. Thanks, as ever, to all of you who help keep all of this happening. And I know you do all you can, and I'm sorry to constantly be asking for further help, but it's money that has to be paid out every blessed month. It just is. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Thursday, the 11th of February edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Did you know that? It's still snowing here. But that's okay. Because I understand that, well, snowfall doesn't mean that the climate isn't changing and that overall global temperatures aren't getting warmer, because I have a brain. Now, while the right-wingers over there continue to sing their I could do some real big thinking, I could be another Lincoln if I only had a brain refrain, you and I know that this is not not to be idly passed by. Winters will get snowier. Summers will get hotter. Springs will get rainier. That is the world that the coal barons and their ilk and the hydrocarbon junkies in general have made for us. Right? Yeah. So if you were
If you were watching either my Facebook or my Twitter feed, and if you're not following my Twitter feed, why aren't you? God, that sounds egomaniacal, doesn't it? With talent on loan from God. Yeah, I just feel nasty talking like that. But seriously, if you were following my Twitter feed or my Facebook feed, and now my Buzz feed at Gmail, this stuff is proliferating. It's all over the place. I can't keep up with it. But if you want to, feel free to follow me on Gmail Buzz, too. Just by following BobKincaid at gmail.com, we can make all of this work out. But if you were following my feed earlier this evening, you would have noted that something beyond the usual wing nuttery of, look at all this here snow. I guess that means there ain't no global warming. Wait a minute, I can't laugh and breathe through my mouth at the same time. Dang, just scuffed my knuckles again. Well, you would know that, well, it's just Repiglicans behaving like Repiglicans, isn't it? I was going to try something trenchant and erudite, but, you know, trying to say something trenchant and erudite about wing nuts, birthers, baggers, tenthers, deathers, and general and sundry right-wing fools. I don't know. That's kind of like trying to talk about the grand existential philosophy of Jethro Bodine, isn't it? Yeah, that's what I thought, too. But, you know what my biggest concern about this weather is? And it has... My biggest concern about this weather is, at this point, the second semester of my kid's school year is being called on account of snow. No school yesterday, no school today, no school tomorrow. Meanwhile, the old-timers around here that I talk to say, I don't understand how they keep calling these school classes off. Back when I went to school, we had a bus that run what had chains on it, and it had to be nigh a blizzard for us to not... But this is also what happens when you take community schools and close them down in the name of consolidated schools that even on the best of dry surface circumstances require a 3-hour round trip ride to and from the little red consolidated schoolhouse. That's why. And then, of course, you have to consider that a lot of the consolidation is going on, especially in southern West Virginia and all over Appalachia and the coal fields. Because we're trying to do everything in our power, not we, but they, trying to do everything in their power to depopulate the region to make, you know, Appalachia safe for the coal industry. Now, that may sound paranoid, but it is damned well true. They've put it on paper. They really, really have. And at this rate... You know, I think if you added up, my kids have been home from school more than they've been at school, and it's not because they've been sick, it's because of the weather. Because various and sundry financially strapped school districts are absolutely snookered when it comes to dealing with things like transportation issues and fuel costs. And why is that?
Well, we can't have no new taxes. Taxes is sinful, and Jesus don't like the taxes. Don't you remember there in the good book when they said, Jesus, should we pay our taxes? And Jesus said, hell no, no new taxes.
Oh, wait, he didn't say that.
Well, that's okay. The right-wingers will pretend that he said that because they're very good at making up stuff that... you know, never actually got said, whether it's by Jesus or James Madison or...